Hey everyone, this is OTR Rob welcoming you to another edition of Richard Diamond, Private Detective and Movie Star Detectives. And this episode is from February 19th, 1950. It's entitled Jewel Thief. And after that is The Lives of Harry Lime from November 9th, 1951. The episode is entitled Art is Long and Lime is Fleeting. I have no idea what that means. And then a bit of Halloween is thrown in for The Saint from April 8th, 1951. The episode is entitled The Ghosts Who Came to Dinner. And The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, Private Detective, from January 15th, 1949. The episode is entitled Black Halo. I have no idea what that means either. And then Box 13 from January 16th, 1948. And the episode is entitled Diamond in the Sky. Now, I've had some problems. It's taken me 2 days to get 5 episodes done. And suffice it to say, one of my programs just totally crapped out on me. I can't even gain access to it. I found another I'm playing around with now, and I'm not really all that confident that it's going to last. We'll see. I may end up having to go to some old system that I'm definitely not familiar with. But in the meantime, we still have these excellent sounding quality episodes, which I bring to you every day of the week, and enjoy them. And be safe, wear your mask, social distance, do all those things that the CDC said for you, and I'll see you all back here next week, God willing, and the creeks don't rise.
National Broadcasting Company presents Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Sorry you're coming along, Diamond.
Yeah, I'm beginning to be sorry myself.
You should be. We're heading for open sea.
Looks like it'll be a long ride.
You don't know how long, Diamond.
We're getting into open water!
You're about to go swimming, deep sea style.
How far is it to the shore?
About 5 miles now.
I can make it.
With a hole in you?
And here's another exciting half hour with Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell.
Diamond Detective Agency, happy homicide.
You know, that's pretty bad, that is.
Oh, my goodness. Walt?
Yeah?
Well, what can I do for the shining light of the Fifth Precinct?
You can get right down here. I want you to do me a favor.
I'm not going to help Sergeant Otis cross the street again. Tell him to get a governess.
This has nothing to do with my brainy sergeant. Now, will you come down?
Well, all right. Business is slower than a drunk turtle, so I'll be there in 10 minutes.
Thanks.
Forget it, forget it. You know what I always say, Walt?
No, what do you always say?
Bye. Well, sometimes that's the way things get started. The phone rings, and Lieutenant Walter Levinson, 5th Precinct Homicide, tells me to get down. One word from him, and I do as he pleases. So I buttoned my collar, pushed my tie back up into strangling position, and 10 minutes later walked into the squad room of the 5th Precinct, where, as always, the King of the Jungle was on hand to greet me.
Well, good morning, Shamus.
Sergeant Otis. Oh, my goodness, you look terrible.
Ooh, what's wrong?
Well, it's pretty obvious. You've been sleeping in the wrong position.
What are you talking about?
Oh, Otis, stop trying to be a sport. Get rid of the bats in your house. They're used to hanging upside down.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
The lieutenant in?
He's expecting you. Go on in.
Thank you, Sergeant. Hello, Walt.
How are you, Rick? You been needling Otis again?
Oh, a little.
Now, you got to stop that. When you come in, he begins to sulk. I got to work with him all day.
Be happy, Walt. Be happy. Think of the 16 hours you're not with him. All those other people. Jumping off bridges, turning on the gas, beating each other with hot paper sacks.
Okay, okay.
Now, what's with you?
Oh, well, this is a pretty ridiculous thing, and I'm in a tough spot.
Well, I'm pretty tough, and you look ridiculous, so let's have it.
Huh? Oh, well, we got a tip that a guy named Wells had a stash of stolen jewelry.
You said had a stash. You mean he hasn't got it anymore?
That's right, we have.
Well, what the world are you mixed up in it for? It's not your department.
It wasn't, but when the robbery boys got over to this guy's house, they found him dead.
Oh.
Murder. Shot through the head with a small caliber automatic.
How about the jewelry?
In the water pipes underneath the sink. About $100,000 worth.
Now, what do you want me for?
Wells' wife says the jewels are hers. We don't believe it.
What did you do about it?
We put out traces on the jewelry. Went through all the regular channels to find the owner. Nobody identifies it. And if we don't get a claim soon, I've got to give them to her.
You mean you got to turn them over when you think they're stolen?
We know they're stolen. They got to be. These people don't have the fare for a fast meal at the automat, but we can't prove it.
What about the guy who gave you the tip on the jewels?
Said his name was Mario Cimino. Disappeared.
Hmm. You got any lead on who knocked off Wells?
We're holding his wife, but we haven't really got a thing. No weapon, no motive, no nothing.
So you want me to see what I can do?
Yeah. Whole department's in the spot. Can you imagine what the press is going to say when I turn these jewels over to the wife?
Yeah, could be rough. But what in the world can I do that your whole department can't?
We've got to solve this thing fast.
Or turn the jewels back.
Right. Hmm. Got a murder to solve. We got a jewel theft to solve.
Oh, that's nothing. It's really nothing. Should be a cinch.
Oh, not for a cop. He wouldn't be able to put on the right kind of pressure.
What do you mean by pressure?
Well...
Mrs. Wells?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Cimino's missing. We need him to tell us how he knew the jewels were stolen. If he's a stoolie, guys like that know you'll give them an even shake. Maybe he'll come out when he hears you're looking for him.
Okay, okay. Now, what about the wife, this Mrs. Wells?
I was holding her till you got here. She's being questioned. You want to see her?
One thing, Walt, before I do. am I going to like this job?
Knowing your taste, I say yes. When the boys brought her in, they walked her through the robbery detail. Everybody went right out and bought yo-yos.
Walt got up then, hid his yo-yo in the closet, led the way downstairs to a small room. It was dark, except for the single light burning near a desk. In the circle of light sat a young girl, late 20s, blonde and... you know. If the State Highway Commission built roads with that many curves, every driver in New York would need seasick pills. She was being questioned by one of the detectives.
I've told you at least a dozen times. I got home 10 minutes before you got there, and I called you.
Your husband had been dead over an hour.
I can't help that. I came home, and I found him, and I called you.
Yeah, you called us. But I'm asking you about the jewels.
Oh, how many times do I have to tell you? He found them. He found them.
Why this routine, Walt? You think she had something to do with it?
Only suspect. We're giving it to her like this so you can take a look without her seeing you.
Where did your husband get the jewels?
He told me he found them. Oh, please, look, I don't know anything about the jewels or how my husband got killed.
What'd you do with the gun?
I told you that, too. I don't know anything about a gun. I didn't kill him, you understand?
Collins!
Yeah?
Come here. Give her another 5 minutes, then send her up to my office. You got to turn her loose.
Okay, Lieutenant.
Somebody bring in the rubber hose?
All right, Mrs. Wells. Now, when did your husband find these jewels?
Oh, please. How many times do I have to tell you? He found them 3 days ago.
You heard enough, Rick?
Fine.
Yeah, let's go.
Yes. Yes, 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 yes!
What do you think?
What do you want me to think? The girl doesn't seem too unhappy about the loss of her husband.
Well, he'd been away for about 4 years up until a week ago in the Army. Occupation forces in Germany.
No criminal record on him, huh?
No.
Mm. Well, let's see what I can find out.
Oh, here's the information on the girl. Address, phone number.
Thanks. Do some more checking on the husband, and I'll give you a call after I see the girl.
How are you going to get in to talk to her?
Walt, did I ever ask you how you got promoted to head of homicide?
No.
Well, you want to tell me?
It's simple. Seniority, experience, hard work.
Well, just lose the hard work, and you've got a fair idea of how I'm going to get in to talk to Mrs. Wells. Well, I had to solve a murder, $100,000 jewel theft, and get the dear old police force out of hot water. All I knew was that a man named Wells had been shot, and another guy named Mario Cimino had called the law and told them about a hatful of jewels that didn't seem to have been stolen from anybody. To clean up a mess like that would take a lot of doing. So I went about it in Diamond's most routine fashion, as unorthodox as possible. I grabbed a cab, slipped the driver a $5 to romp over to Greenwich Village a little faster than usual, And before I could say, look out for that streetcar, I was standing in front of a door with a small tag over the bell that read, Vladimir Sokolovsky, artist. Vladimir was an old friend of mine who hears all, sees all, and tells all for a small price.
Who is it?
Come on, Vladdy, open up.
Go away.
It's Diamond, Vladimir.
I trust no one. You might be working for my landlord.
No, I'm alone.
Scout's honor?
Cross my heart and hope to swallow my Emmys.
Don't worry. Trust with ye.
I haven't got much time, Vladimir.
Huh?
I want you to do me a favor.
Oh, for you, a portrait costs only $50.
No, no pictures, Vladimir. Oh. Tell me, ever heard of a guy named Mario Cimino?
Oh, but of course... No.
Hmm. Paid your rent?
Same answer.
I have a small $10 bill here.
Tavares, you would attempt a lowly bribe.
Well, what do you know? Here's another $10.
I would ask you to stay for lunch, but Greenbaum won't even let me look in his delicatessen window anymore. You understand.
25?
I only do it because Stalin and I do not agree. Mario Cimino. Peasant.
What does he do?
Keeps busy. An occasional stick-up bookmaking. Owes me $11.80. Marianne and the 8 at Hialeah by 8 lengths. Such a filly.
Vladimir. Hmm? Mario Cimino?
Oh, yes, the lowlife. For him to find a friend would be like Rasputin running a Lonely Hearts Club.
Where can I find him?
I don't know.
Vladimir.
It's the truth.
Scout's honor?
But of course, if I knew where that peasant was, would I not collect my 11.80? Of course I would. Scout's honor, see?
You hold up 3 fingers, Vladimir.
Oh, a Cub Scout.
When was the last time you heard from him?
When he took my $2 that wins me 11.80. He was in the fish business.
Oh, fish business?
Yes, I know, because he brought me 2 halibut, which I promptly made into magnificent stew for my landlord. Was miserable.
The stew?
No, just the fish. Believe me, Tovarish, those 2 halibut were so old, they remember Jonah.
Was he selling fish?
Catching them. Mm. He had a boat. When I went down there to collect my 11.80, the bomb wasn't there.
Where did he keep the boat, Vladimir?
A disgusting place called a Schooner Landing. Places like that should be in Siberia. Stinks.
Well, thanks, Vladimir.
Ничего, Tovarish, до свидания.
Oh, Chichonia, Greenbaum's delicatessen, will you be surprised? Greenbaum's delicatessen, Greenbaum's delicatessen, Greenbaum's delicatessen.
Hello, Abe. Send up the works. Champagne, caviar, salami. I am a capitalist again.
Hello there. Hey, I said hello.
Hello.
You run this landing?
Yep.
Know a man named Cimino?
Mario Cimino?
Yep.
Yep.
Seen him lately?
Nope.
When was the last time you saw him?
You a cop?
Nope.
It's too bad.
Why do you say that?
Owes me a week's rent on my boat.
Skipped out?
Yep.
I understand he was fishing down here, is that right?
Yep.
How long ago did he rent the boat?
2 weeks ago.
How long ago did he skip out?
About a week.
Anything unusual about the things he did?
Well, he sure weren't no fisherman.
Why do you say that?
Didn't know the first thing about it. When he first rented my boat, he used to go out for 2 or 3 hours and come back with a couple of fish. Didn't have no rigging to speak of. No live bait, just a pole.
Didn't that bother you?
Nope. Weren't none of my business. Had a license.
You mean a regular fishing license or a commercial?
Yep.
Commercial?
Yep.
Did he do anything unusual the last day he was down here?
Well, I don't know. He went out about 4 o'clock in the afternoon and was back here by 6:30. Only thing unusual about that, it's a funny time to go fishing.
What day was that?
We could go tomorrow, Tuesday.
Thanks, Pop.
Hey, sure you ain't a cop?
Yep.
G-man?
Nope.
Don't say no more than you have to, do you?
Nope.
Bye, sonny.
Well, I left the old boy sitting on the dock trying to figure it out and headed for the city hall. Mario Cimino was closer now. I knew a little about him. His whereabouts up until a week ago and the fact that he'd taken out a commercial fishing license. The license I wanted,
because it would have a picture of Cimino on it. The picture I could turn over to Walt, and then we could get out a description on him. I arrived at the city hall, went in, found the department that issues the licenses. They checked with Walt at the station, and 10 minutes later I was heading for Mrs. Wells' apartment with a fishing license and a pretty good photograph of Mario Cimino.
Yes?
Yes.
Well, hello. What can I do for you?
That's a remark with a lot of answers. Right now, I want to talk.
Go ahead.
Oh, well, I get tongue-tied when I stand in the hall.
You want in?
That's it.
Why?
Ever see this picture before, Mrs. Wells?
What? Come in.
Seniority, experience.
What?
Oh, nothing.
That man in the picture, who is he?
Don't you know him?
I've only seen him once. Oh, we can sit on the couch, Mr.
Diamond. Where did you see this man, Mrs. Wells?
He came up to see my husband. He was leaving just as I arrived.
Your husband say who he was?
No. He mentioned something about some business he had with this man.
Well, if it makes any difference to you, this man in the picture is Mario Cimino.
Oh. The one the police are after. The man they think killed my husband.
The man who called and told Lieutenant Levinson about the jewels your husband had hid in the water pipes.
Are you from the police?
Well, here we go again. No, honey, I'm a private detective.
Oh.
Your husband just got back from Germany a week ago, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
By boat?
Mm-hmm.
What day did he arrive?
You've got big blue eyes, haven't you, Mr. Diamond?
Yeah.
Very pretty.
Honey, you better sit over there. You're scorching my collar.
All right.
Where was I?
I don't know where you were, Mr. Diamond, but I was thinking...
Oh, yeah. Well, what day did your husband arrive?
Last Tuesday.
When did he...
You must have a hard time combing your hair. Awfully curly, isn't it?
I'll stop back when I got more time. We'll straighten it out.
Please do.
Well, Mrs. Wells.
Yes?
The time your husband's boat got in?
In the afternoon, around 5.
Oh, well, thanks, Mrs. Wells.
Leaving?
Going home and have another talk with Father.
Please stop back. If he misses anything, I'll be glad to fill in.
Maybe I'll send Dad instead. It was a little hard getting out of there because my shoe leather had started to burn and my number 10s were beginning to turn up like skis. I rocked my way down to the cab, did a slalom around 2 lampposts and a fire hydrant, slid into the back seat, and 20 minutes later, I got out across the street from the 5th Precinct Police Station. I was just stepping off the curb when...
Hold it right here, Diamond.
What?
Don't move. Don't turn around.
Oh, well, I hope that's a pipe you got in your pocket.
If it is, it's the first one you'll ever see with a trigger in it. Keep smiling and walk back over to that alley.
Okay. Had to poke a hole in me.
Better to have it poked than blown.
Hey, your dialogue's pretty bad.
It's far enough. Now, your name is Diamond, isn't it?
Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll tell you mine if you'll give me the gun and let me make you tell me yours.
Your dialogue's as bad as mine.
Yeah, I guess I deserve that.
Okay, I haven't got much time. Give me the picture.
Oh, I can't do that.
You better or I shoot you.
What will Mom say?
What's your mother got to do with it?
She took it. It's the only one of me on a bear rug facing north.
The picture of Mario Cimino. I'll give you 3. 1.
Okay.
Thanks. Now stay put. Count 10 before you turn around. Believe me, Diamond, I mean it. I'll kill you if you move before 10.
You're being pretty silly, Mario. They'll pick you up, sure.
I don't think so.
Oh, by the way, Vladimir says to thank you for the 1180.
Tell her it was nothing. Start counting.
1, 2, butt my shoe. 3, 4, close the door. 5.
Find out something?
Well, I sure did. This is the lousiest precinct in the city.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Now, 2 minutes ago, I got stuck up right at your front door.
What?
Yeah. And I had that picture of Mario Cimino on the fishing license.
He swiped that?
You just know it.
Well, don't yell at me. You haven't solved this mess, have you?
No, but I'm pretty close.
Well, that isn't close enough. I had to send the jewels over to the wife a few minutes ago.
Oh, dandy.
Well, I had to.
Well, what about the newspapers?
They haven't gotten wind of it yet. We still have a little time. Now, what about Cimino? How did he know you had the picture on the license?
Well, somebody gave him the tip. Gave him my description, but just relax. It wasn't Cimino who stuck me up.
It wasn't?
Not unless he paid Vladimir Sokolowski $1,180 in the last hour.
Wait a minute. I don't understand.
Well, you're not alone. I'm a little mixed up, too.
Well, let's both get untangled, shall we? Tell me what you found out.
All right, all right. Now, listen. Wells arrived last Tuesday by boat in the afternoon around 5.
This we know.
Mario Cimino was being a fisherman then.
Oh.
He'd rented a boat, taken out a fishing license.
Okay.
The day that Wells arrived, Cimino went out in the afternoon, stayed about 2 hours, came back and disappeared.
And then Wells shows up with a sink full of jewels.
Right. Probably had them on the boat. Avoided customs by dropping them overboard, and Cimino picked them up.
And Cimino killed him for the loot.
Why?
Why? $100,000 in jewels? Why not?
Wells was killed in his own apartment, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Well, if Cimino picked the jewels out of the water, why go and kill Wells? Why not just take off? Wells could never go to the police.
Oh.
Yeah, and another thing. The pickup was pretty carefully planned. Wells couldn't have done it. He was in Germany. Somebody here had the planet. Knew Wells had the jewels.
The wife?
Could be.
But where did he get the jewels in the first place?
Oh, a lot of that stuff's still hidden in Germany. You check with military intelligence, and I'll bet it ties up.
Well, this guy who stuck you up and lifted the picture, you say you don't think it was Cimino. Maybe there's a third party.
Could be, but I doubt it. I got a hunch, Walt. Take me down to the morgue. I want to take a look at Wells.
Okay, let's go.
You owe me $25.
$25? For what?
Oh, small bribe.
Oh, well, here.
What's this?
It's as good as money. Tickets. Policeman's benefit.
Oh, gee, Walt. You know something?
What?
You're a real sport.
Right over here. Well?
Bullet didn't help his face. Why don't you get the army records on Wells?
Why? The wife identified him.
Good for her, but she missed one slight detail.
Yeah?
Yeah. This isn't Wells.
What?
That's right, Walt. This is Mario Cimino.
How do you know?
From the picture on the fishing license. This is the same guy.
Good grief.
And you had to go and give the jewels back to Mrs. Wells.
But...
if you still want to save those jewels along with your hide, you better grab orders and get over there.
But...
I'll see you when you get there. Now step on it.
But...
I left Walt in the middle of a butt and took off for Mrs. Wells' apartment in a hurry. On the way over, I went through the facts. Cimino was dead. The body in the morgue wasn't Wells. The jewels were undoubtedly the motive, and unless I was wrong, I'd have to move fast to stop them from leaving the state. I went out of the cab and up the steps to Mrs. Wells' apartment. I reached the door and tried it. No luck, so I went in anyway. Front room was empty. I went through the other rooms. Nothing. Clothes gone. Drawers empty. They'd taken off with $100,000 in jewels, but where to? They had to be smart enough to know they'd never get out of town by the usual means of transportation. So what would be better than to pay up the back rent on Cimino's boat and go fishing? I left Walt to note where I was headed and took off for Schooner Landing. Papa, which boat was Mario Cimino renting?
That one just getting ready to go out, right over there.
Thanks, thanks.
Go get him, sonny. I knew there was something fishy when they paid up on Cimino's back
end. Oh! Well, good afternoon. I represent the Sleep Type Mortuary.
Bob!
What is it?
We've got a passenger.
Good afternoon, Bob.
Diamond.
Everybody seems so surprised.
I'm sorry you're coming along. We're headed for open sea, Diamond.
Well, I might as well take off my shirt and get a tan.
Take the wheel, Lois. Leave your shirt on, Diamond. You can take it off when you go for a swim.
Oh?
And don't get any ideas. I don't want to shoot you until we clear the breakwater, but I will if I have to.
You're Wells, aren't you?
That's right. How did you figure it?
Oh, partly guesswork.
The fishing license tipped you Cimino was dead, not me, huh?
That's right. You didn't know whether I was working with the law or not, but you had to get that picture to give yourself enough time to get out of the country. Your wife called you and gave you my description.
I knew the damage that picture could do if it got to the police, so I had to tag you.
Pretty smart.
Thanks.
We're getting into open water.
You can start taking your shirt off, Diamond.
I swim pretty well.
With a hole in you?
Why'd you kill Cimino?
He wanted 50% defensive stuff. I wouldn't buy that. Found him phoning the police and had to kill him.
So you put your papers on him knowing your wife would identify him as you. Why didn't you just grab the jewels and take off?
You sound like you're stalling for something. But I'll tell you anyway. Those jewels are in the sink. I knew the law'd be there in 10 minutes, so I had to take the chance they wouldn't find him.
Bob, there's a boat coming up pretty fast.
So what?
Well, I hate to spoil the party, but I think it's the Coast Guard.
You're nuts.
I think dear old Lieutenant Levinson got my little old note.
So that's what the star was
Bob!
About. Shut up and stay with that wheel.
Bob, that boat!
Shut up! All right, Diamond, down in that cabin.
I'll get seasick.
None of your funny cracks. Just get down there.
I think I'll take this life preserver just in case.
Drop it.
Sure.
Give me that gun.
Bob, that boat's almost alongside. Bob!
Hey!
Bob!
Bob!
You heard what the man said, baby. Stop the boat.
Rick.
Yes, Ellen?
Phone for you. Walt.
Oh, thanks, dear. Hello?
Rick, I just got a report from Army Intelligence. The jewels were stolen from a collection that the Germans had evidently hidden during the war.
What about Mrs. Wells?
She admits the whole thing. She saw her husband on a furlough a year ago, and he told her to expect word when he was ready to move. She contacted Mario Cimino for the fence. She'd probably get life.
Well, that's too bad. She was the type who really could have had a good time with life.
What are you doing?
Looking at my beautiful girlfriend, Helen.
Oh, thanks.
I say hello.
The lieutenant says hello, honey.
Hello, Walt.
Why don't you two get married?
Why don't you mind your own business?
Rick was just going to sing me a song, Walt.
Oh, yeah? Well, leave the phone up, Helen. I'll get Otis. Otis?
Yeah, Lieutenant?
Come here. I want you to hear something.
Go ahead, Rick.
All right. Oh, Otis, listening, Walt?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Well, get your nose out of my ear.
Oh, sorry, Lieutenant.
What song would you like to hear, Otis?
You're going to sing something for me?
Sure, just for you. What's your favorite?
Well, now, let's see. Do you know... Otis!
Otis, that's the song.
Sure, you know, Washington at Valley Forge, cold as heck and up Oak Georgia.
Otis!
How
about get out of the wheat thresher, Mother? You're going against the grain.
Oh, I don't know.
It's an old spiritual. Look, I got a better idea. You just listen, huh?
Okay, but I still like... Otis,
you're fighting me.
Okay.
There's a place I'd like to be, and it's back in Tennessee, where your friendly neighbors smile and say hello. It's a pleasure and a treat to meander down the street. That's why I want the whole wide world to know. I love those dear hearts and gentle people who live in my hometown. Because those dear hearts and gentle people will never ever let you down. They read the good book from Friday till Monday. That's how the weekend goes. I've got a dream house I'll build there one day, with picket fence and rambling rose. I feel so welcome each time that I return, that my happy heart keeps laughing like a clown. I love the dear hearts and gentle people who live in love in my hometown. I feel so welcome each time that I return, that my happy heart keeps laughing like a clown. I love the dear hearts and gentle people who live and love in my hometown. Well, did you like that, Otis?
Oh, Diamond, you're dreamy.
Rick, Otis just swooned.
Bye, Walt. Come here, Helen.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't they silly?
Yes, Rick. Oh, darling. You are dreamy.
Oh, Diamond, you devil, you.
You have just heard Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell. Ed Begley played Lieutenant Walt Levinson. Also in the cast were Wilms Herbert, Francis Robinson, Jack Crucian, Yvonne Patey, and Charles Seal. Music was under the direction of Frank Worth. Tonight's show was written by Blake Edwards and directed by Russell Hughes. Dick Powell currently may be seen in the motion picture version of the best-selling novel, Mrs. Mike. Two other shows for Sunday on NBC that you want to hear tonight are The American Album of Familiar Music and Take It or Leave It. Together, they make up 1 hour of the very best in listening pleasure for you. Baritone Thomas L. Thomas brings you the songs you love best during the 30 minutes of restful reminiscence on The American Album. And immediately following this delightful musical show, Eddie Cantor comes romping into your radio with the $64 question on Take It or Leave It. There's a solid 30 minutes of question marks and laughs when it's time for Cantor Sunday on NBC. Make it a point to hear both The American Album of Familiar Music and Eddie Cantor's Take It or Leave It tonight and every Sunday over most of these same NBC stations. There are two more of NBC's great lineup of Sunday shows. This is Eddie King inviting you to be with us next Sunday at this same time when we will again bring you Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, Private Detective. James Melton and Erna Berger star next on Harvest of Stars on NBC.
Orson Welles as the Third Man. The Lives of Harry Lime. The fabulous stories of the immortal character originally created in the motion picture The Third Man, with zither music by Anton Karas.
Burden you with the sordid details about how I met two very lovely Brazilian women named Inez and Aurora. They were very rich. They were in Paris on a buying spree, and the three of us became inseparable friends in very short order. I told them I was a dealer in masterpieces of famous painters. They were most eager to see my collection, so I began to browse around old antique shops looking for something to sell them.
As Harry Lime, the Third Man, in today's story, Art is Long and Lime is Fleeting.
Bonjour, monsieur.
Bonjour.
Please, can I help you?
Oh, just look around, thanks.
Of
thanks
course,
a lot.
If you tell me what you are
I'm looking for a painting, an impressionist school, perhaps.
I have a
know.
Few oils. This way, please. Here they are. They are very cheap.
Yeah, not very good either.
I have one that is a little more expensive. If you would step this way.
What?
Now, this one is very good.
There's a picture of a bather. And in a dark light and from a considerable distance, it might look a little like a Renoir. I looked the picture over carefully to see if it had a signature on it, but luckily enough, there wasn't any inscription.
A charming painting.
Now, who painted it?
It is hard to say.
It's just a little bit like your Renoir.
Well,
yes. How much is it?
10,000 francs.
I'm sorry, old man. That's over it.
It is a very fine painting, and as you say, it looks a little bit like a...
Here, what I'll do, I'll give you another 1,000 francs, and you put the picture in the heavy old gold frame there hanging on the wall.
Oh, no, monsieur. That frame cost much more than the picture.
Okay, 12,000 francs. No more bargaining. Is the deal?
All right.
I'll wait for it now.
I know you will appreciate it.
I expect someone else to appreciate it far more than I. I took a suite at the elegant George Sank Hotel and hung the picture on the wall with a tiny spotlight over it. Underneath, I had a small brass plaque which read simply, Renoir. Then I invited Inez and Aurora to have cocktails with me in my suite.
That was a very funny story, Monsieur Harry.
My dear Inez, it's true, every word of it.
I do not believe it. You make it up to keep us in smiles.
I do anything to keep you both in smiles, as you put it.
You're very charming to us, Harry. I am most enthusiastic to see the painting.
I will get to Mr. Renoir by and by. How about another drink?
Not for me, one is enough. Me for two. I mean, two for me. I am mixed up.
I understand you perfectly. Here is me for two.
Shall we not see the picture now?
All right. Step this way, lovely Inez. Beautiful Aurora.
Thank you for your compliment.
Oh, I don't compliment you. I merely tell the truth.
It is over dark in here.
I'll put the light on in a minute. I'd like you to stand here as the best distance.
Oh, it is so exciting to me to see a real Renoir.
Mm. It's exciting to me every time I look at it. I'll switch on the overhead light. Magnificent, isn't it, Inez?
Oh, it is beautiful.
I've looked at this picture 1,000 times. Just can't part with it. Look at the form of the bather, so chaste, so full of feeling. See how the master subjugates detail and form.
Much do you want for this painting, Harry?
I don't think I want to sell it.
Oh, you said you would. You are your mind changing?
Well, it's true. I need the money, but well, you understand. It's the one beautiful thing in my life.
But you are a dealer. You must not go backwards on your word.
Let me think about it. There's no hurry, after all.
But we must have
it. Let's have lunch tomorrow. We'll decide then,
If you do decide, how much do you want for it?
I'd never sell it under 4 million francs.
4 million?
Too much money for you and too hard for me to part with it, so we'll just remain friends, shall we?
I do not care how much money. I must buy it.
We'll meet tomorrow at the usual place for lunch and talk it over. In the meantime, you think about it, and I'll think about it.
All right, Harry. 1:30 tomorrow.
Good. I'll be there. They left a few minutes later. It's working out fine. They were on the hook. All I had to do was to carefully reel them in. Then came a knock on the door. Yes?
Hello, Harry.
Paul Bazin.
So, you still remember me? I thought you would have forgotten me by now.
I never forget old friends. We used to be partners, old man.
A partner, eh?
That's right.
Well, they hustled me into jail. You hustled off to the Riviera with all the money.
It was an accident of fate. I was awful sorry you were caught, old man. There's nothing I could do.
You're going to have an accident too, Harry.
I don't do anything foolish. What good will it do you to shoot me?
You have no idea how much good it will do me.
Not
like water to a thirsty man. I've been waiting for 2 years in a Luxembourg prison for this.
Listen, old man, they guillotine people here in France for committing murder.
If they catch them.
Look, if you put the gun down, I'll tell you about a little deal that's coming off tomorrow. I'll cut you in on it.
I'm not interested.
Your share will be 2 million francs in cold cash.
That's right. 2 million?
2 million. Put the gun down. I'll tell you about it.
You'll talk better this way. Talk fast. Maybe I'll be interested.
You see those two women coming out of my suite?
I saw them.
Well, they think this is a Renoir hanging on the wall. See what that? You're going to give me 4 million francs for it.
And you are going to give me half out of sheer generosity?
No, not out of generosity. You can help me. Besides, you have some money coming to you.
I'm going to get it, too.
A very rich Brazilian, ladies. And tomorrow at lunch, we're going to clinch the deal. I want you to be a friend of mine, you know, an art dealer.
I don't know anything about painting.
Doesn't matter. Neither do they. Is the deal?
How do I know you're telling me the truth?
Well, I'm afraid you just have to take my word, old man. I don't know how to prove it to you. Till tomorrow at noon.
I'll phone the women.
They're not at the hotel yet.
I'll wait. I'll be asking for 3 million out of the 4.
Very good idea. How about a drink, Paul?
No.
Well, I hate to drink alone. However, I shall have myself a small one. We waited an hour until Inez and Aurora returned to the hotel. Paul was satisfied that I told him the truth, and he finally left me. Until lunch tomorrow. I began to think of a plan to get rid of this fellow. Can't stand people who hold grudges for years. It's a sign of immaturity. We met at lunch as scheduled.
Mr. Bazin, what is your opinion of impressionist painting? How does it compare with the modern?
Well, I think it's very different.
Mr. Bazin does not particularly like modern art. He hates to talk about it, as a matter of fact. He's against any form of art that isn't immediately comprehensible to everyone.
Yes, I feel very strong about it.
And me also. Abstracts are to me crazy painting.
Yes, I think so,
How
too.
How about another cup of coffee?
No, thank you. Let us talk about the Renoir.
Yes. By the way, when are you two lovely women leaving Paris?
Yet, we do not know. Maybe 2 weeks, maybe a month.
Oh, it's hard to leave this city. Chance everybody.
We have decided to pay you 4 million francs.
Oh, did you? Well, we'll think about it some more, shall we?
But that is the price at which you gave it.
Yes.
Oh, I am getting all mixed up again. You haven't changed your mind, Harry.
Well, not exactly. Let's give it another few days. You're going to be in Paris a few weeks. There's no hurry.
You don't want to sell it?
Well, I do. That is, I must. But you see, after I left, I had an offer from the Fontaine Galleries. About 5 million. I'm very embarrassed by that. I don't like this kind of business.
Really. But you said yes to 4 million yesterday.
I didn't make a promise. I said I might sell it for 4. You must understand, I'm a businessman. I must sell it to the highest bidder, after all. Why don't you forget the Renoir? I'll be glad to show you other paintings. Very fine. Famous artist for much less money.
We will give you the request you ask.
Well, it's worth much more, I assure you. How do you feel about it, Inez?
We will buy it for 5.
If you can afford it, I think you're making a wise investment.
I'll write a check for you right now. Give me the checkbook, Aurora.
If you don't mind, I'd rather have it in cash.
Wow.
Well, I have some very urgent bills to pay. It'll take a week or so to clear through the bank. I can wait until this evening. You can get the check cashed at your bank. We can meet for dinner. We'll have a real big celebration,
Party?
Yes.
You will be guest to us.
No. You're my guest, please.
You come too, Monsieur Bazin?
With pleasure, mademoiselle.
Where shall we meet? Shall we go to my favorite restaurant, Tour d'Argent?
I know where it is.
Oh, it's one of the best in Paris. Now, I must go. Garçon, addition. I was quite pleased with the way things were going. My only regret would be that I would have to leave Paris. Have to leave Aurora. Beginning to get rather too fond of Aurora. She was my type, beautiful, not too encumbered with brains, but she had lots of spirit and exuberance. And as they say in France, as a fair son, as a fair. I had one real problem, to get rid of Bazin. But he stuck close to me, like a tree to the earth.
I'm going back to the hotel with you.
Oh, okay, if you want, old man.
I won't.
Might be better if you went home and packed. We're going to have to leave Paris in a hurry.
I am staying with you until after dinner.
You're a very suspicious fellow, Paul.
I trust you as far as I can move the Eiffel Tower.
You don't have to trust me. We're all meeting for dinner at Tour d'Argent. The restaurant can't run away, can it?
But if you double-cross me...
It's impossible, Paul. All you have to do is show up at the restaurant. Pack all your stuff and pick me up at the hotel. We'll go down together,
All right.
Okay.
But if you try to do any tricks, Harry, I'll swear I'll hunt you down and I'll kill you.
Now, Paul, I mean it. I know you're a very sincere fellow. Meet me at 5 o'clock in my suite.
Orson Welles returns in just a moment as the third man. Orson Welles, as the third man, continues with today's story, Art is Long and Lime is Fleeting.
I had to work fast now that I was rid of Bazin. I hurried to my hotel and began to pack my clothes, and I telephoned my two Brazilian customers.
Hello?
This is Harry.
Oh, Harry. You have your mind not changed.
No, I just learned that the Tour d'Argent is closed tonight.
then we shall someplace else go, no?
Of course. There's a superb Italian restaurant called the Casa Bellini. Write the address down, will you?
I have a pen.
Good. It's 43 Rue Victoire. I made a reservation for 7:30.
We will be...
Tell Inez I'm sorry about the train.
Oh, it is very nothing.
I suppose she's gone to the bank, hasn't she?
Yes.
Ah, good.
She will be back soon.
What makes you so happy?
Inez says I have for you much liking.
And is it true?
Yes, Harry.
True for me, too, Aurora. I think you're the most charming woman in all of Paris.
You are to me, too. Oh, I get mixed up again.
I know you and I are going to be the very best of friends. See you tonight, honey.
Tonight, Jerry.
I packed quietly, wrapped up the painting, and got ready to leave. The sooner I left my suite, the better. I had a hunch that Mazel would change his mind. Come early. Yes? Hello, Paul.
You are about to leave?
Well, I was just going down to pay my bill, as a matter of fact.
You lied.
You know, you're getting me awfully unpleasant, Paul, old man.
You are getting up to something.
I am getting up to 5 million francs for this little package here.
I think you were trying to run away. I think I came just in time.
You're not thinking. No matter where I ran, I'd still have to be at the Tour d'Argent at 7:30.
Where were you going when I came into the room?
I told you I was going downstairs to pay my bill. You're being very dull, Paul.
You don't fool me.
I think you'd better come along, huh?
We'll go down together in a little while.
Now, look here, Paul. We have 3 hours until we go to the Tour d'Argent. You're not going to stand there with a gun in your pocket all afternoon.
That is exactly what I am going to do.
Well, I have to go to the bank, arrange for my plane ticket. You're being quite a bore, old man.
You never had money in the bank in your life.
So happens that you are cruelly wrong.
Show me your bank book.
It's downstairs in the hotel safe with all my other valuables.
You are lying.
A partnership based on suspicion and mistrust can never be successful, old man. Really.
We are going to be Siamese twins for the next few hours. It's no use arguing with me.
Well, if that's your decision, you might as well sit down. You get very tired standing up there for 3 hours.
You worry about me a lot, don't you?
I was brought up very carefully. Ingrained in me to be a hospitable host. Now, I'm glad you're taking my advice. Like some refreshments? A drink, perhaps?
No.
Just want to sit, hmm?
That's right, just sit.
Well, don't doze off now.
You think you're funny.
No point in being grim about it. Want some cards?
No.
Have a set of dice somewhere just to while away the time.
I don't want to do anything.
All right. He just wanted to sit.
That's right.
I couldn't catch him off guard. He sat in the chair and kept his beady eyes on me. I don't mind people staring at me, but as I had a gun, and he discovered my defection, he would become peeved, I thought. My gun might go off. He just sat there for a long time, and then even he became bored and just sitting. Tilted his chair against the wall, rocking himself back and forth. The pressure of his toes against the floor. A sudden kick on the back legs of the chair when he was tilted would certainly give me an advantage.
You.
As he fell backwards, I hurled myself at him, pinning his arms. He managed to get the gun out of his pocket, but I rolled the chair over his arm and he let go of the gun. I seized the gun and placed it against the back of his head with a good deal of force. The fight was over in less than a minute. He lay there quietly. I figured he'd be out for an hour at least. Yet, Mr. Bazin was out of the picture.
Forgive us for being late, Harry.
Oh, please.
It was the fault of me. I took too much time to seem beautiful.
You don't seem beautiful. You are, both of you.
Monsieur Bazin is not coming.
He won't be here. He wanted to come very much, but he was suddenly taken ill.
Oh, that's too bad.
And he'll be all right, I think.
I am much hungry. You make the selection for us. We do not know the French word.
Oh, I'd be delighted. Perhaps we'd better settle our business first, though. Business before pleasure, you know.
Oh, let's eat first. There's no hurry. We have all the night.
Didn't like this. They didn't seem to be so eager for the painting as they were at lunch. Maybe they were only hungry. Maybe. I don't like their attitude at all. I like your pêche melba, Aurora.
It is superbly. It will make me fat, and then you will not like me anymore.
It will make you fat, and I will adore you even more, darling.
We must thank you for a very fine dinner, the best we eat in Paris.
I'm very pleased that you're pleased. And now that we've eaten, shall we finish our business? You know, the Renoir is all wrapped up.
Oh, hurry. We haven't had our brandy yet.
But we can negotiate while we wait for the brandy, hmm?
Oh, you Americano, so impatient.
I Americanos like very much. Impatient men is very nice.
It's a custom in our country to get our business over with first. Very droll in that respect. Then we can all relax and enjoy ourselves, shall we?
Oh, Harry, you do not say a word all evening about my frock, the which I wear for you, especially.
It's a beautiful dress, perfectly beautiful. I must say that if you've changed your mind about the painting, it's perfectly all right. You don't have to be embarrassed.
Oh, no, Harry. We have not changed our mind. Okay. Let's have the brandy and then we settle the business.
Okay, okay. Garçon? There was definitely something wrong. They were obviously stalling. But stalling for what? I was getting very uneasy. The waiter brought the cognac and they sipped it a drop at a time. For 15 minutes, they dawdled over it. I decided not to wait any longer and forced the issue.
Tell us something about yourself, Harry. Oh. About America, I mean, when you lived
really,
there.
Really, there's nothing much to tell. I grew up like any average American boy. I got interested in art, but I learned soon enough that I'd never be a good painter.
You were an artist?
Well, not much of one. Now, if you'll forgive me for bringing this up again, I will give you the painting in exchange for 5 million francs. I'm afraid that we'll have to do it now or not at all.
But Harry...
I mean it, Inez.
All right.
We'll all feel better once it's done.
Well, here's the money. You can count it.
Oh, I trust you. Please, I won't even open the envelope. And here's your envelope. I hope you'll enjoy it as I have.
We will.
Mademoiselle, oh, I am sorry. I am late. I just couldn't get away.
Oh, Monsieur Bordet, this is a Harry Lime.
Now, how do you do?
I am pleased to meet you.
Monsieur Bordet is an expert on Renoir's painting. He's from the Louvre Museum.
Oh, the Louvre. Now, if you'll just excuse me for a minute.
Just a minute, Monsieur Lime. I have got to leave. I'll just take a quick look.
Wait,
please sit down.
I'll unwrap it.
I began to figure the distance to the door. Looked like this might be one of the times to run and fight another day. Monsieur Bordet motioned the gendarme, who had evidently accompanied him, to come into the room and close the door. Well, I took care of that. I just have to bluff it out. The expert slowly unrolled the picture, held it this way and that.
How much did you agree to pay this man, mademoiselle?
5 million francs, monsieur. Is it too much?
Too much or not enough?
I don't like your tone. Just what do you mean by that, sir?
The light in here is too dim for me to make a definite opinion, but it could be a Renoir. Mm-hmm. There is a painting of his with this same general composition. Mm-hmm. The figure is not bad. The colors like his.
You think it is a real Renoir? I was sure it was all right.
I would like to take it with me and examine it more thoroughly. But I can say this. If it is a Renoir, it is worth 20 million francs.
Wait, 20 million?
Qu'est-ce qui arrive, hein?
Eh? Monsieur.
De quoi s'agit-il, hein?
You are not going to arrest anybody. Keep your hands high.
You better do as he says. He looks dangerous.
So the picture's worth 20 million, eh? I'll take it with me.
Oh,
now stay as you are or you'll get a bullet. And don't follow me.
Bazin grabbed the picture and ran. Talk about a break. With the gendarme, the girls, and Bordet, I ran after him, yelling, "Stop, thief! Stop, thief, thief!" All the time blessing myself for not having tied him as securely as I thought I had. All I had to do was to follow him away and then get lost. As I tore along in his wake, I noticed a couple of street Arabs huddled around a small fire. They scattered in panic. I sprinted, tackled. He hit the sidewalk. The picture flew out of his hands. I shoved it into the fire. "I've caught you, you rogue. Now I'll teach you to steal, thief."
No, monsieur,
do not attack him. We will take care of him. It is not wise to beat a police officer at Paris.
I'll kill you for this, Lime.
I'm afraid all you'll do for a while is a nice stretch on the Bastille, my friend. Take him away.
Come along, mon petit. I think we walk to the station. I have a few suggestions to make to you on the way.
My wonderful Harry.
Good while, ma'am.
You have the bandit captured.
Yes.
You are so brave, so wonderful.
Oh, you are all right.
Wonderful action, Monsieur Lime. An heroic deed. But where is the picture?
The picture. It must be right here. It flew out of his hand when I tackled it.
Oh, the picture. It is burning. It will be destroyed.
Get it, Harry. It is burning.
I'll get it. I'm afraid it's completely gone.
Oh.
Of course, I made sure the picture was burned. I managed to grab a corner of it, but I had to drop it back into the flames. What a pity. The girls in Bordet were very concerned over my hand, but what's a few burns compared to a term in the local hoosegow and 5 million francs, not to mention getting rid of Bazin. O'Day and I saw the girls home, and then after making a date for the next evening with Aurora, I offered to drop him at the Louvre, where he still had to make his report.
There is only one thing remaining to say, Monsieur Lyon.
Mm-hmm. Yes, what is that?
I would not want you to think that I am such a bad expert that I really had any doubts about the picture.
You mean that it was an original?
No, I mean that it was not.
Oh, I see. Well, how much do you want for that?
Nothing.
Nothing? I don't get it.
Monsieur Lyon, if I had everyone arrested who tries to sell a fake picture, the prisons of Paris would be full. I wanted only to give you a chance to get away without embarrassment. I hope this will be a lesson to you and that you won't try it again.
Monsieur Bourdais, I can't tell you how much I appreciate your courtesy. You're a wonderful fellow. I must tell you, I want you to know what an inspiration people like you are to people like me.
Harry Lime returns in just a moment.
Face it, friends, the world is very generously populated with mugs. Millions and millions of mugs just waiting like the proverbial sheep for the proverbial fleecing. In fact, if they weren't shorn from time to time, they wouldn't be comfortable. Always makes me laugh to read that one of the mugs was an innocent victim of a confidence game. Now, just how innocent, I ask you. If you want a path beaten to your door, don't waste your energy inventing a better mousetrap. No, just hang a sign out, scarce items at prices you want to pay. However, till we meet again, look after yourselves. And remember, if you don't, no one else will. Thank you.
Adventures of the Saint, starring Vincent Price. The Saint, based on characters created by Leslie Charteris and known to millions from books, magazines, and motion pictures. The Robin Hood of modern crime now comes transcribed to radio, starring Hollywood's brilliant and talented actor Vincent Price as the Saint.
Hey, Mr. Templer.
Yes, Louis?
Starting to rain.
So it is.
You couldn't get a dinner back in town. You had to travel all the way out here in the country to eat?
Louis, I was invited to a dinner party, and Long Island is hardly the country.
It's full of trees, ain't it?
True. This does happen to be a rather lonely spot, but...
The rain is getting heavier, too. I should have stood in Brooklyn.
Oh, I'm sorry, Louis.
What is a cabbie from Brooklyn doing out here in the middle of nature?
He seems to be driving a cab. Hey, Louis.
Yeah?
Is it possible that the roof of your cab leaks?
It's possible.
It's leaking.
On you?
On me.
Well, after all, Mr. Temple, according to the chemistry books, we're composed of 98% water anyways.
Perhaps. I find the percentage high enough without any additions, however.
There's no extra charge. We've got... Hey, Mr. Temple, the motor. It stopped.
So I notice. Discouragement?
No, it's possible the hood leaks, too.
Oh, that's nice.
No, don't blame the motor. After all, it ain't composed 98% water.
It shortly will be. While we sit here and calmly contract pneumonia.
Who's calm? Look, Mr. Temple, you know something? This could be the beginning of like a real horror story. It's the nighttime where two guys stuck out here in the wilderness.
Long Island.
The rain is raining, the thunder is thundering, and I'm scared. You know what ought to happen next? If this was a horror story? That's what ought to happen next.
It did. Sound came from the left through those trees.
Yeah. Oh, hey, I see lights.
It must be a house. Doesn't seem very far away.
But that's where the dog yelled from, huh?
Yes, except that judging from the sound, the dog was outside. That's strange. Why would a dog be out in this downpour?
Maybe he read a book on chemistry. Or maybe he's just leading the dog's life. That was a joke, I think.
Yeah. And I may laugh later. At this moment, there's someone running down the road.
Yeah, from the direction of the house. Look, he's heading for us.
I hope you don't mind, but can you give me a lift back to Glenville?
Oh, we'd be glad to, except that we're stuck here ourselves. However, you can join us inside. It's slightly less damp.
Thanks. But I won't stay long. I don't care for the neighborhood.
Yeah, how did you get here?
I'm a cab driver.
Well, where's your cab?
Back there.
That house?
Yeah, the Hawthorne place.
Well, why didn't you take your cab when you left?
Because I was in a hurry. Because there was things closer to the cab than I was.
What kind of things?
Listen, young man. Nobody lives in the Hawthorne house. Nobody's lived there for over 100 years. So tonight, back in town, I picked up a fare, and where does he want to go? The Hawthorne house. I'm an old fool, so I take him there. He gets out of the house, tells me to wait, goes inside. Well, I walk around to stretch my legs. Then I notice the house is all lit up. I think that's mighty queer. But I figure maybe somebody new bought the place.
Well, perhaps someone did.
No, because I go around to the side, and I look into the house through the big front window, and I see who's in the house. It ain't anybody new.
Oh, who was it?
It was the folks who used to live in that house 100 years ago.
Huh?
And what was worse, they were sitting around a table eating dinner.
Oh, I see. You say they were the people who lived there 100 years ago. Well, how could you know that?
Because of the way they was dressed. Because of the way they looked. Mister, I've lived in Glenville all my life. And there's pictures of the Hawthorns going way back in the Glenville Town Hall.
Well, perhaps the people you saw were descendants of the original Hawthorns.
Sure, except nobody dresses that way anymore. Except that one of them was bleeding onto the tablecloth with his throat cut open, and another was putting food into his mouth, only he didn't have a face around that mouth.
Look, you're positive you didn't imagine...
All right, I imagined it. I'm crazy. Think whatever you like. But me, I'm getting out of here.
So long.
Hey. Let's us get out of here, too, Louis. Hmm?
Oh, that's swell with me. Are we going to walk to Glenville?
No, I'd like to take a look at that house.
Why?
Well, we may still be in time for dinner.
But, Mr. Templer, I ain't hungry. And besides, that guy might still maybe be bleeding.
I doubt it.
You do, huh? Why?
You're forgetting we're 98% water, aren't you?
Oh, that answer's supposed to cheer me up.
The dog I'm worrying about, Louie.
Why?
Well, out here, a dog would be kept for companionship, protection. Therefore, why was that dog put out in the rain?
I'd just as soon forget the dog. Ooh, somebody is busy not paying attention to me. Oh, hey, that's the house, huh?
Yeah, obviously. Colonial architecture, large, rather pretty. Huh. Brilliantly lit.
With colonial electricity?
Candles, Louis. Huh? You can see them through that large window. Chandeliers ablaze with candles.
I can't see anything else except the ceiling. Oh, that must be the dining room.
Yeah, probably.
Mr. Templer, is all this real?
It seems to be. Huh. Hey, bell pull on the door, huh? Mm.
Ooh, the dog don't like our ringing the bell. Look, Mr. Temple, look. An elephant with teeth.
Yeah, it's a large dog. It's drenched.
Look out for your hand. You could easily swallow it. Ooh, look, now he's heading for me. Mr. Temple, did I have to come all the way out here to feed a dog?
Oh, don't be silly, Louis. He likes you. He's looking up at you.
Yeah, trying to decide which part to start on.
Louis, there's positively a light in his eyes. For all you know, you may be his ideal.
Yeah, sure. His ideal dog food. Oh, get down. Mr. Temple, leave us go inside, huh?
No one answered the bell. I wonder. It's open.
Hey, look, the pooch. He's leaving.
That's strange. He sounds terrified. But of what?
I didn't say a thing.
Huh. Hallway seems empty. Let's go in.
Ooh. Kind of quiet.
Yeah.
Not even a chain clanking, not even a creaking.
Hey, Louis, there...
What?
There's a door down the hallway. It's probably the dining room.
I ain't hungry.
The house is old, dusty, unused. But there is a light.
Maybe they forgot to turn the gas off when they all died or something.
Uh-huh. It's the dining room.
I ought to run out and buy some oil for that door.
Large table in the center, chairs all around. White linen and polished silver on the table.
Yeah, plus dishes with food.
Yeah. And food that's warm, Louis.
Look, Mr. Templer, I don't like this. A house in which nobody's lived for 100 years, miles from anywheres, all lit up with candles in the middle of the night, a table with fresh cooked food on it, and there's no one, no one at all at the table.
Unless we can't see them, Louis.
Found a lot of cobwebs, Mr. Templin, a lot of empty rooms, but nothing living.
No, may as well head back for the dining room.
Don't let your appetite tempt you. Probably by now all the food has vanished.
Hey, listen to that sound.
Yeah, like dishes rattling?
Yeah, come on.
Maybe the guests all came back.
They were in the house. It would mean they'd all have to rush out into the rain, but why?
They were thirsty, maybe. I don't know.
The door's ajar. Shh, shh, shh. Perhaps we can look in without being seen.
Yeah. Hey. I don't believe it. A butler. An old guy dressed in clothes that belong in a museum. Look at, he's got knee pants on with lace cuffs.
And at that table, where there's no one seated, he's serving dinner.
Maybe he's just practicing.
For what?
I heard of ghost writers. Maybe he's a ghost butler.
Suppose we go in and find out, huh?
Yeah.
Good evening.
Be still, if you please. Be still.
I was afraid we might disturb the guests.
He's gathering some of the dishes. Going to the swinging door. Probably leads to the pantry.
Look, he's waving on us. Should we wave back?
No, he wants us to join him. Mm-hmm. Come along.
Uh-huh. Serving pantry.
I Beg your pardon.
Indeed you should.
But you are...
Horton. Horton's the name, of course. But the footman must have told you that.
The footman?
Caleb. He let you in, didn't he? Shouldn't have directed you to the dining room, of course. But then he's getting old. You'd better go to your quarters at once, there behind the main staircase. Glad you came along. We need you. Caleb isn't the man he used to be. But then he's been with the Hawthorns for so many years. I remember when he entered service.
You do?
It was the year old Boney got his toes toasted at Moscow.
Old Boney?
Can't stand around gossiping all evening. Guests might notice. Get to your quarters, men. I've work to do.
Hey. Look, he ducked out.
Yeah. The door's locked. Probably a spring latch, which means we may as well go back to the dining room,
Look, you know, something's wrong with this whole thing. Mr. Templer, who is Old Boney?
Huh? Oh, that happens to be the nickname the English had for Napoleon, Louis.
Oh, fine. So Horton says he remembers the year Old Boney got his toes toasted at Moscow. Look, my brother-in-law, Joey, you know, happens to be a very educated man.
College man?
No, graduate from the United States Army. He's now a mechanical-type engineer. Look, anyway, once he told me Napoleon was in Moscow in 1812.
Yes, your brother-in-law was correct.
But, Mr. Temple, that would make this guy Horton over 150 years old.
I'm afraid it would.
A guy over 150 years old is dead. So what's Horton doing walking around, huh?
Well, he may have been too busy to lie down and die.
That does not put a twinkle in my eye. Look, Mr. Temple, I want to go home.
Louis, there's a pattern here of some kind. A pattern for horror. And if that pattern is to mean anything, I... Hey, Louis.
Huh?
That closet there.
Yeah, it's a closet. Yeah.
Yeah, suppose we open it.
Look, I don't like to mention this, but in all old families, you know what they keep in closets? They keep skeleton in closets. Stample of... It fell down.
Yeah. No skeleton, however.
That I can see for myself.
Fortunate thing on the whole.
Why, what's fortunate about it?
Well, with a skeleton, you could never tell whether or not its throat had been cut.
His throat has been cut?
Yeah, thoroughly.
Let's go take a trip someplace. Let's...
Louis.
What?
Haven't you realized something else?
I don't think I wanna.
This man here is dressed just as we are, not in the costume of a dead age.
Well, it didn't help him any. Oh, you found something?
Yeah. Long brown hairs clinging to his clothes and... Various papers. Yeah. In life, Louis, his name was Charles Gray. He was a lawyer.
Oh, the Bar Association ain't gonna like this.
There's something else.
What?
He was carrying this document, Louis.
Yeah, what is it?
A copy of the last will of one Samuel Hawthorne.
Hawthorne? Him we didn't meet yet.
No, lots of closets we haven't opened yet either.
Yeah, we're not going to if I can help it. Well, what does the will say? And you better read fast, because all them candles, you know, are beginning to give up.
I, Samuel Hawthorne, being sound of mind and body, do hereby make this my last will and testament. It is my desire that all my heirs in time to come, in order to inherit my vast fortunes, must at least once a year open Hawthorne House and there give a ceremonial dinner to the neighboring gentry.
In costume?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
At this dinner, everyone present must wear clothing of my time.
Uh-huh, yeah.
My heirs must be of high moral repute and avoid divorces. Obviously, the dead man here, Mr. Charles Gray, was the lawyer in charge of the estate and presumably came here to make sure the terms of the will were met.
Okay, so now we know the ghosts weren't really ghosts. Yeah, but what? We haven't seen any of them.
It's true. Nor any neighboring gentry. However, that stipulation was probably waived.
Yeah, look, Mr. Temple, you know, we better maybe get the police.
Yeah, there aren't any phones around here, Louis.
Couldn't we walk to Glenville?
No, Louis, I think we're here for the night.
Oh, fine. Fits right in with that pattern for horror you mentioned. Oh, all I personally need right now is for someone to scream good and loud. Mr.
Mr. Templer, this makes the second time we've searched the house and found nothing.
That was a woman screaming, Louie.
Maybe it was a ghost.
Ghosts aren't supposed to scream. They clank chains.
Yeah, maybe this here ghost didn't know that. What, back to the dining room?
Yeah, I suppose. Only room in the house with lights.
Is that good? Maybe the corpse took a walk or something. No. Still here.
Yeah, and still dead.
Ah, fellas.
Having fun?
Dressed up like Napoleon, too. Look, he ain't walking very straight.
I hate to seem inquisitive, but, Mr. Gray, his throat's in a bad way, isn't it?
Well, it's not especially normal. I'm Simon Templer. And you?
James Hawthorne, sir. Besides housebreaking, your occupation is what? Hey, you're the saint, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Oh, isn't the slitting of larynxes rather an odd occupation for the saint?
Well, it would be if I had cut Mr. Gray's throat. However, you're Samuel Hawthorne's heir?
Yeah, the current one, yes. You've been snooping.
Well, there was a clause in the will about divorce.
You've been overdoing that, Snoopy.
You're married, Mr. Hawthorne?
Sorry. Would have helped supply a motive, I suppose, but I'm not, nor have I ever been, fortunate or unfortunate enough to be married.
A woman screamed a few moments ago. Who was she?
I didn't hear.
Well, you couldn't have failed to if you were in the house.
But I wasn't.
But you must have been. It's been raining out. Your clothes are dry and spotless.
Well, to be honest, I wasn't in the house, and yet I was. You searched the house, I presume?
Yes, yes.
You overlooked the cellar?
I didn't find one.
It's a tricky place to get to. The entrance is behind the chimney in the parlor. Something to do with colonial politics, perhaps. At any rate, I was down there.
You're fond of cellars?
They were, when they were equipped with bottles and bottles and bottles of Napoleon brandy. Yes. Now, if you don't mind, I'll sit down. I have another few hours to remain in costume and here in order to comply with the terms of the will. I'm sleepy. I shall, therefore...
That's polite.
It's more probably brandy.
So what do we do? Sit here and listen to him snore?
Napoleon keeps cropping up all the time. Louis, suppose we go downstairs and have a look at his bottles,
Ooh, some staircase down to the cellar.
Yeah, it's very narrow. My shoulders keep rubbing against the wall.
And a dirty wall, too. Hey, look, the cellar's all lit up. Candles on barrels. Hey, and lots of barrels, not to mention kegs and casks and everything.
Hands up!
Yeah, casks and blondes and...
I said hands up!
With .42 caliber revolvers. .42?
You didn't expect me to be armed, did you?
I'm afraid we didn't expect you at all, Miss...
Naturally you would say that. But this isn't going to work out the way you thought.
I'm afraid I haven't had any thoughts recently.
Look, Mr. Temple, she's running up the stairs.
Yes. Hey. She bolted the door behind her.
Oh, Mr. Templer, that was a very solid type of door leading to the cellar. And the cellar is about 6 miles underneath the ground, and we're locked in.
Oh, don't worry, Louis. We'll be released in time.
In time for what? A funeral?
That girl was beautiful, Louis.
She's on the other side of a locked door, so what good does it do you, huh?
I can worry.
Oh, this is an occupation for a grown man. Worry about what?
The part she's playing in this entire mask.
Mr. Templer!
Yeah, those were shots.
Did they answer your question?
Hardly. We don't know who shot at whom.
The girl had a revolver.
Yeah, so she had.
Still locked?
Yeah, still locked. Don't bother, Louis. No one will answer. May as well go down again and make ourselves comfortable.
Yeah. For how long? 20 years?
That don't be silly, Louis.
You got an optimistic thought?
We'd never last 20 years down here.
You know something, Mr. Templer? I'm beginning to feel aged in the wood.
You better restrain yourself. We've only been down here half an hour, perhaps.
Hey, the Marines have landed.
Yeah. Let's get another bottle. Get another bottle.
Definitely an amphibious operation.
Good for the Mr. Templer. Tippling, huh?
Well, not exactly.
Ah, very naughty of you. Don't mind admitting that's why I'm here myself. Need another bottle of brandy. Don't know what happened to that one upstairs. It's all empty. Must have evaporated, huh?
Oh, perhaps those shots frightened it out of the bottle.
Oh, you had them, too, huh?
Yeah.
I had them myself, you know. Matter of fact, I'm violating no confidence when I tell you those shots were fired at me.
Whoever shot at you couldn't have had very good aim.
Fortunately for me, no. Carla, dear cousin Carla. Happens to be, and I permit myself to be vulgar, a lousy marksman. Or should I say markswoman?
Carla being blonde and beautiful.
Oh, you've married her. She's next in line for Samuel Hawthorne's pretty little fortune, you know. If I should happen to be disqualified or dead.
Well, you have your bottle. Suppose we go upstairs, hmm?
An idea. Mm-hmm. Confounded staircase. Plaster walls. Comes off from one's shoulders, eh? Can't rub it off, either. Back in the parlor. Mr. Temple, you have a reputation for these things. Who cut Mr. Gray's throat?
A murderer.
Oh, very pretty, Whitson. But why?
It was Mr. Gray's task to see to it that the provisions of the will were observed. His death, therefore, must have had something to do with that. You're a bachelor?
Indeed I am.
Was he?
No, had a pretty little wife. Oh, she'll be desolate. As a matter of fact, merely thinking about her grief makes me desolate. Therefore, touching this bottle, and I hope you won't think me too terribly selfish, I shall toddle off to Betty by a dusty bed, perhaps, but it's almost morning. Hey, good night, gentlemen.
Him, I am very glad to see go. But how about us?
Now we go for the police, Louis, if your cab will start. However, Carla...
Oh, let's not look for her, huh, Mr. Temple? A girl with all those calibers don't appeal to me.
Oh, you're being narrow-minded, Louis. After all those shots, how many calibers can she have left?
Wet out, it's cold, it's dark, but do I mind? No. Out here, at least, no ghosts. No corpses, neither.
Louis.
What?
Look.
Oh, the other cab.
Let's have a look, Louis.
Oh, I didn't like that. Should I take a look, too?
You might as well.
Okay. I'll take... Wow. It's the frightened cab driver, Mr. Temple.
Yes, except that nothing will frighten him anymore.
Mr. Temple, this here's not a healthy neighborhood for throats. His has been cut, too.
Yes, same technique as used on Gray. Louis, we've got to get back to the house.
You don't like our throats the way they are?
Come along, Louis. It's no time to go to Glenville.
There's lots of time.
In which a murderer may kill again.
Oh, let's change a few subjects, huh?
Very well. Yeah, I've got three questions, Louis. Why did the cab driver, whose body we've just seen, lie to us? Why did Carla think she was in danger from us? And... can a bachelor be divorced?
The answer to the last one, I know he can't.
Right. Therefore, we know who the murderer is, don't we?
Ooh. Hey, that dog.
We know about him, too, don't we?
What do we know about him?
You remember I mentioned the long brown hairs clinging to Gray's clothes?
Yeah.
Now, those hairs must have come from the dog we saw. The dog, therefore, belonged to Gray.
Uh-huh. Hey, Mr. Templer, down the hall in that alcove?
Yeah, if I move quickly.
No! Let go of me!
Hello, Carla. Going to run away?
No, but I won't let go of the gun.
Yes, you will. It's much too heavy for you.
Ow!
Now, just come along with us.
All right. If you don't try anything.
I won't, except for catching a killer.
A killer? But what...
We want the dining room.
Well, everybody back so soon?
Nearly everyone, Mr. Hawthorne.
Oh, I'm glad you got Carla's gun, Mr. Templer. She might not miss me again.
We don't know that it was she who shot at you, do we, Carla?
Why?
It would be easy to discover if this gun has been fired recently.
Well, maybe I did shoot at him, but I...
There's something else that should come first. Charles Gray was murdered in this house earlier tonight. Why? Both you, Mr. Hawthorne, and Carla covered a fortune. That's why you're both here.
Yeah, Mr. Temple.
Louis, all Mr. Hawthorne had to do was spend the night here in appropriate costume and also refrain from appearing in a divorce case. A bachelor can appear in a divorce case, can't he, Mr. Hawthorne?
You found the papers for the divorce suit on Gray. Amy Mia's correspondent, eh? He was always so touchy about his wife.
I didn't find them. Doesn't matter, however. I knew they or something like them had to exist. On the other hand, if Horton, the ghost butler we found serving dinner earlier this evening, is really insane...
You're trying to pin the murder on him?
He left the house in time to have committed it.
Yeah, there's usually a motive, you know.
Mr. Hawthorne, which murder are you talking about?
Gray's murder, naturally.
No, because Horton wouldn't have had to leave the house to kill him. Gray was murdered in this room. But you accepted my statement about having to leave the house to murder. You're both talking about the cab driver's murder, aren't we?
What cab driver?
The one who brought Gray here, the one who saw Gray murdered, the one who fled and then thought things over and decided to return for a little exercise in blackmail.
Yeah, Mr. Temple, you said he lied to us, but what about?
You remember, Louis, he told us he'd looked into the dining room through the front window and had seen the ghosts at dinner? Do you also remember, however, that when we got to the house...
Yeah, we looked in the front window, too.
Yes.
Yeah, and all we could see through it was the chandeliers in the ceiling. I said so myself. The cabbie lied.
And died for it.
Look, I haven't been outside the house all evening.
You must have been. You claimed you were in the cellar when we first met.
Yes.
That's why you didn't hear Carla scream. But the cellar stairway is narrow. It's impossible to avoid getting plaster on your shoulders. Plaster that can't be rubbed off. And yet when we first met, I remarked that your clothes were spotless.
They should have been wet.
Nonsense. You'd had time to change from your ordinary clothes. You didn't think of rubbing plaster on the costume, however. Too bad. You might then have applied to the scarlet of murder a coat of whitewash.
I was hiding in the cellar because James had threatened me. You see, I knew Mr. Gray was going to sue his wife for a divorce and name James.
And if he did, you would inherit all the Hawthorne money.
Yes. I was terrified that he would kill me.
I see. Tell me about Horton, Carla.
Poor Horton has been hired every year for the occasion. He's very, very old. Now tell me about you, Simon.
Well, I...
Mr. Templer, I don't mean to interrupt you and Miss Carla, but it's...
Louis,
yeah?
You don't have the ghost of a chance.
You have been listening to another transcribed adventure of The Saint, the Robin Hood of modern crime. Now here is our star.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Vincent Price inviting you to join us again next week at this same time for another exciting adventure of The Saint. Good night.
This script of The Saint was written by Louis Vittes. In the cast, you heard Adrian Martin as Carla and Edmund MacDonald as James. Tudor Owen was the butler. Fred Shields, the cab driver. Louis is played by Larry Dodkin. The Saint, based on characters created by Leslie Charteris, is a James L. Safier production and is directed by Helen Mack. Vincent Price is soon to be seen co-starring in RKO's production of His Kind of Woman. Your announcer, Don Stanley. Three chimes mean good times on NBC. Whether it's comedy, music, or drama you're after, you'll find it on the big show today. And today also means a one-hour adaptation of F. Scott Fitzgerald's exciting novel, This Side of Paradise, presented by Theatre Guild on the Air and starring Richard Widmark and Nina Foch. April is Cancer Control Month. Guard your family against cancer by joining the 1951 Cancer Crusade. Mail your generous contribution to cancer, care of your local post office. Hear the cast of Green Pastures today on NBC. Somewhere in the cold, persistent rain that made the city itself seem a thing of evil, a girl had disappeared, and it was my job to find her. But before I did, I found death and a devil.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character as CBS presents The Adventures of Philip Marlowe.
And now, with Gerald Moore starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Black Halo.
For 3 days, an ugly storm had lashed at the west coast from northern Oregon to the tip of Lower California. And although it was only noon when I drove up to the sprawling red brick house just south of Santa Barbara to meet a new client of mine, the black that was in the sky and the driving rain that was everywhere left the day bleak and wet and cold. Left it the kind of day that made you feel that logs blazing in a fireplace and a warm, dry robe were the only things that could matter to anyone. But when I got inside the house, Felix Drum, 350 uncomfortable pounds of executive in a wheelchair, who made his living importing perfumes, was very worried. And not about the weather outside.
Marlowe, Julia Perry is gone. I want you to find her and bring her back. And the sooner you do that, the better.
And the more I know, Mr. Drum, the easier it'll be. Exactly who is Julia Perry?
My assistant. Very capable girl, who in the past 6 months has practically taken over my entire business. She handles most of the work from her cottage here on the grounds where she lives.
Mm-hmm.
She also has some little cubbyhole in Los Angeles where she keeps her files and some sample stock.
Do you have the address of that cubbyhole?
If I knew the answer to everything, I wouldn't have hired you. And anyway, it isn't important. Hand me that little bottle.
This one? Please.
Yes.
No, here.
Thank you.
When did you last see Julia, Mr. Drum?
3 days ago. It was 3 days ago when she left on one of her regular weekly trips down to Los Angeles to bid on perfumes. Usually she stayed away overnight, but the Beachwood Plaza Hotel most of the time, and she was back here by noon the next day.
I suppose you've already checked the Beachwood Plaza, huh?
Yes, of course. My man Ruby, the one who showed you in, has called the place a dozen times. But they only know that Julia registered there 3 days ago and hasn't been seen since.
Well, what about the girl herself, Mr. Drum? I mean her background, friends, family, that sort of thing.
Yeah, as far as I know, Marlowe, Julia has no friends, no family either. She's just a sweet but smart little girl from someplace in Kansas.
Mm-hmm. No beaus, not even nice ones, huh?
I don't think she had the time. You see, when Julia first came to work for me, she wanted to get ahead, and I gave her the chance. She made good.
Mm-hmm.
Today, she's as much my right arm as Ruby is my leg.
Mr. Drum, did you notice anything unusual about Julia's behavior lately?
Yes, and that's the reason I'm worried. About 2 weeks ago, I saw changes in the girl, Marlowe. She seemed less spry, more preoccupied.
Oh?
Yes. I figured it was overwork myself, since the end of the year always means detailed annual reports. So I made no comment at the time.
I see. Tell me, Mr. Drum, what does she look like?
Well, I have no pictures, but she's a blonde of medium height and was wearing a plaid raincoat and a little circle of a hat when she left.
Uh-huh.
Altogether, she's sweet and simple, if that's what you mean.
Yeah. Do you mind if I stop into the cottage on my way out?
Marlowe, you turn the place inside out if it'll help any. Only since I'm certain that Julia's in some kind of bad trouble, you be quick and find her.
Julia Perry's cottage was strictly the 50-50 arrangement that Drum had mentioned, with one room office and the other living quarters. In the office, I found everything in its proper place, so I moved to the other room. The moment I stepped over the threshold, the white fluff that trimmed the quilted bedspread and the splash of color in the drapes said that Julia Perry had to be something soft and warm. The half a dozen quietly tailored suits that were lined up in the closet like a squad of soldiers facing right told me that she was also simple and neat. I ran through the pockets of her clothes and all the drawers and closets in the room, trying to find something that would give me a lead that I was sure I had to have. But after 20 minutes, I'd found only a leather cigarette case, a package of peppermint lifesavers, and a maroon and gold monogram book of matches, the cover of which was half torn off so that I could only be certain that the middle initial was a V and that an E or an F were on either end. But since the name and address of an L.A. novelty company was on the inside, I bought the matches as a starting point, dropped them into my pocket, and headed for the door. When I opened it, I was surprised to find Ruby, Drum's right-hand man, purple scar and all, standing in the rain, and staring at me like my ears were spinning.
You
seem to be a very thorough man, Mr. Private Detective.
And you seem to be a very nosy one. What do you want?
To help Julia, nothing else. Here's a postcard that came for her this morning. It was mailed in L.A. yesterday.
Yeah? Dear Julia, tried to reach you at Santa Barbara 1181 both yesterday and today, but got no answer. I'm leaving. I'm leaving town tomorrow. As one little girl who fled life in Haven, Kansas, to another, I would have enjoyed seeing you again. For a bit before I moved on to who knows where. Anne. Santa Barbara 1181. Is that the number here?
Yeah. It's Julia's private business phone. Well, what do you think? The postcard, any help?
Possibly. Tell me, Ruby, why didn't you show this to Mr. Drum?
I forgot about it until just now.
You're a liar.
Well, it's on account of the postcard was delivered here to the cottage.
Which is no man's land for you?
Yeah, sort of. Mr. Drum doesn't like people who work for him mixing socially with each other.
Well, maybe a sweet kid like Julia hasn't got any use for the passes you've been making at her, huh?
Hold it. I like Julia, and even if she don't go for me, anything I can do to help her, I still do, understand?
Yeah, I understand. I'm not so sure I believe. Goodbye, Ruby. It was pushing 5 o'clock and still raining by the time I got back to L.A. and over to the novelty company. Once there, I presented the torn book of matches that I had found at Julia's cottage to a bald man with horizontal question marks for eyebrows, and who, with the crinkle of a $5 bill, tore himself away from his racing form long enough to check the files for a set of maroon and gold initials that had a V in the middle. And it was 6 o'clock before I had the answer, which was EVE. And they weren't initials, but the front name of Mrs. Eve Bentley, who lived in a villa at the swank Sunset Terrace Apartments. And according to the gentleman who said he knew his oats, was a very classy filly. An hour later, I was at Mrs. Bentley's front door, and while I made with the chimes and waited, I wondered just how much a guy who loves the ponies could know about women. But when the door opened, I had my answer.
Yes? What is it?
Mrs. Eve Bentley wasn't beautiful, but she was everything else, including a shimmering yard of gold hair piled high on her head, and held in place by a knot of pearls that no Boy Scout ever tied. Her face was wide blue eyes and open red lips on a backdrop of soft, fair skin. She wore a black silk jersey dress that must have been sprayed on. She smiled when I said my name was Philip Marlowe and that I wanted to talk.
Talk about what, Mr. Marlowe?
Julia Perry. Ever hear of her?
No, I haven't.
So I'll try again. What do you know about Anne somebody from Haven, Kansas?
Absolutely nothing.
This torn book of matches says otherwise. I found them in Julia Perry's cottage. Julia Perry's missing. I'm a private detective who was hired to find her, and the matches turned out to be yours. Now, may I come in?
Why, yes.
Thanks. Well, Mrs. Bentley, maybe we ought to start all over.
No, wait just a minute, Mr. Marlowe. I may be able to help you. Did this Julia Perry deal in perfumes?
That's right. Now, how did you know that?
Because I just remembered something. And now I'm sure I can explain why my matches showed up where
they did. Just a minute. You know, whenever I'm talking to a beautiful woman, somebody's always creeping around in the kitchen. Who is it this time?
Oh, really, Mr. Marlowe? There's a storm outside, and there are windows and trees. If you put those three things together, that noise could have been a branch scratching on a glass pane.
Or somebody with squeaky shoes and a lot of curiosity. Somebody like Mr. Bentley, for instance, huh?
Oh, I doubt that, Mr. Marlowe. You see, Mr. Bentley's been dead now for 3 long years.
Oh, yes. Well, you were saying something about the matches.
Oh, yes. This Julia Perry must somehow have other gotten hold of them through my fiancé, Marvin Whittaker.
How does that figure?
Like 2 and 2. Marvin is in the perfume business. Ditto Julia. Also, I think he mentioned her name once. Said she was very clever for a girl who looked like somebody's kid sister.
That fits all right. Where will I find said fiancé?
At his favorite bar and grill. But won't you have a drink first, Mr. Marlowe?
No, thanks, Eve. There isn't time. Now the bar and grill.
The Blue Boar.
Blue which?
Boar, Mr. Marlowe.
Yeah.
It's a very English spot over on Wilshire, opposite Arthur Murray's studio. But before you dash, do you at least have a match?
Yeah. Whole book of them, honey. Torn cover and all. And I want you to keep them. After all, they brought us together, didn't they? I got outside, I postponed my run between the raindrops over to Wilshire Boulevard long enough to take a look behind the villa. And there, in a newly planted strip of clover lawn below Mrs. Bentley's kitchen window, I found something which was no surprise. Two clear prints of a man's shoe. But from there on out, I got nothing more than a lot of rain down the back of my neck. So 10 minutes later, I dripped into my car and headed for the Blue Boar and Eve Bentley's gentleman friend. I located Marvin Whittaker, a handsome, hale fellow well met, in a white turtleneck sweater and riding breeches, behind a hot rum toddy in a corner booth that was pictures of steeplechase mounts against newly antique mahogany. And when I told him that I was looking for Julia Perry, he flashed a lot of glistening teeth at me, insisted that I join him in a warming glass of spirits, and started to talk, gesturing all the time with a riding crop.
Why, yes, old man, I know Julia Perry. In fact, almost did some business with her today.
You mean you were supposed to meet Julia someplace?
That's right. At 1881 Selma Avenue, to be precise. But she called me this morning and postponed the whole transaction. Indefinitely.
Could you stop projecting long enough to tell me why?
She didn't say. Of course, it's of no bother to me on a day like this. No sane man should be any farther away from a toddy than we are right now. So drink up, old boy. It'll do you a world of good.
Yeah, I bet it will. Look, Mr. Whittaker, one more question. Did Julia ever speak of a girlfriend named Anne? Someone she knew years ago in Kansas?
No, I don't believe she did, Marlowe. Matter of fact, Julia never talked of anything but perfumes. Now drink your drink, fellow, before it's chilled through.
Thanks, but no thanks, old bean. I do have to run, really. It was a 20-minute drive to the address on Selma, and the rain had stopped by the time I got there. The place was one of those once-upon-a-time rooming houses that had been partitioned off into a couple of dozen 2x4 cubbyholes, just big enough for the very small businessman to fill his fountain pen in. When I got to the door and asked the scrub woman, who was a lot of wild red hair around two pop eyes, for Julia Perry, I knew I was moving in the right direction, because the lady standing in front of me was anything but calm. And more important, she had just heard a pistol shot from the back of the house.
Yes, that's right. A pistol shot not over 2 minutes ago. I'm sure that Perry girl had something to do with it. Because when I come from inside, I saw her rush out down these steps.
Did she say anything?
I don't know. She was gone out of sight before I could open my mouth. But I know it was her on account of that plaid coat and little hat she wears.
Yeah. Now, which room is hers? Come on.
Well, that one there with the light showing under the door.
Mm-hmm.
But it's locked. She won't be able to get in. I just tried.
Well, we'll try again for luck. It's not the best lumber. Believe me.
This is terrible. Nothing like this has ever happened to me before. It's a man.
Yeah. A dead one at that, Granny.
Do you know who it is?
Uh-huh. From the mud and clover grass on the bottom of his shoes, I'd tag him as a guy who was looking in a lady's kitchen window about an hour ago. But from that purple scar on his chin, I can do even better than that. The name, Granny, is Ruby, a guy I thought was still in Santa Barbara.
In just a moment, we will return to the second act of The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. But first, given clues, even the newest of Philip Marlowe fans can deduce the characters in CBS's great new early Sunday evening comedy lineup. The washboard leads you to the one and only Spike Jones. The bumblebee? Well, of course, that's for America's most famous non-virtuoso violinist, Jack Benny, who follows Spike Jones on CBS. The two A's, Amos and Andy, who are heard on CBS immediately following Jack Benny. So it's really no mystery at all why millions of Americans now stay tuned to CBS on Sunday nights for these three superb comedy shows in succession. Spike Jones and Amos and Andy over most of these same CBS stations, and Jack Benny over them all. And now with our star, Gerald Moore, we return to the second act of Philip Marlowe and tonight's story, The Black Halo.
Ruby's body sprawled on the floor, and the girl in the plaid raincoat running away from it meant one thing. Julia Perry's trouble was important, like life, but more like death. A half sneer was congealed on Ruby's face, and his eyes, turned waxy, still held a look of mild surprise. And I wasted some breath telling the scrub woman not to touch anything, and then I put in a call to my overweight client in Santa Barbara. He was glad to hear from me, at first.
Marlowe,
Well, now, I didn't expect a call from you this soon. You sure work fast, don't you, lad? Have you found her? Have you located Julia?
Not quite. She's about 5 minutes ahead of me. Incidentally, Mr. Drum, she works fast, too.
What do you mean by that?
Let me ask the questions, huh? Number one, what was your leg man, Ruby, doing in L.A. tonight?
Ruby?
Yeah.
Why, I sent him in to pick up some medicine for me. Why?
Come on, Drum, you can talk straighter than that, and you're better. I just found Ruby dead.
Dead? Ruby's dead? What happened to him, Marlowe?
He was shot. So forget the gags and tell me why he was snooping around.
All right. I didn't trust you.
No.
It's my policy to trust nobody until he proves himself. I sent Ruby in to follow you and check on your progress.
That was brilliant. You only made 3 mistakes. First, I don't need to be checked on. Second, you got your man killed. And third, you forced Julia's hand. Because it was Miss Perry herself who pulled the trigger on Ruby.
Julia? Marlowe, I don't believe that.
Which proves nothing, Mr. Drum, but skip it. Tell me, do you know a man named Marvin Whittaker?
Whittaker?
Yeah.
Oh, should I?
Well, he says he's in the perfume business.
Well, I know everybody on the coast who bought more than 2 bottles of perfume at one time in the last 40 years, and I don't recall that name. I think the man must be a liar.
So do I. Thanks for the help. And Drum, if you've got any more expendable flunkies around, keep them out of my hair. I'll call you when I've got something. Called homicide next and told Detective Lieutenant Ibarra where to find the body and who was responsible for it being in that dead condition. When the question of why came up, I admitted I was still shooting blanks. Oh, I told him about the razzle-dazzle Whittaker had handed me and named the Blue Boar on Wilshire as my next stop. Ibarra said he'd call me there, and when I got to the entrance of the place, I saw Whittaker, draped in a trench coat that involved enough cloth to rig a 4-masted schooner, standing in the anteroom, impatiently smacking his leg with that riding crop. He looked positively dashing. Question was, which way?
Hiya there, Marlowe. Hey, old boy, you look upset. Anything wrong?
I may be upset, Whittaker, but you're the one that's going to spill. First, are you leaving or coming back?
I'm just leaving.
Been here all the time since I talked to you?
That's right. You see, my coat is perfectly dry.
It stopped raining half an hour ago.
Well, you see, if I'd been outside, I would have known that. But why this third degree, Marlowe? What's up?
It's a long story. Maybe we better sit down and talk it all over from the beginning.
Oh, I'm afraid I can't. Not just now. I've got a date.
She'll keep.
Not this one. It's something rather special.
Special, huh? Like Eve Bentley?
Now, look here, old boy. You're prying into my personal affairs.
Whittaker, I'll rip the lid clear off your personal affairs if necessary to get a clean answer out of you. Now, what do you really know about Julia Perry?
I told you once. Are you implying that I'm a liar?
At least that. For instance, who puts out Amir? Come on, Whittaker. It's a well-known fragrance.
Why, I don't recall offhand.
That's strange, because any woman knows Amir's a Dana perfume.
Just what are you trying to prove by all this?
That is a perfume dealer, you stink. And try this for size. When I got to that address you gave me, I found a fresh corpse there with a bullet hole in it.
A murder?
Yeah, and your routine was pat, brother. So before homicide starts combing out the snags in your story, you better untangle it yourself right now. You lied to me. Why'd you do it, Whittaker? Why the double talk?
All right, Marlowe, I'll tell you. I'll tell you this! Oh!
He was as quick as a wounded cat. The riding crop slashed across my face even before I'd realized he'd moved. And by the time the red light stopped dancing in my eyes, Marvin Whittaker was gone. I turned as the head waiter walked up to me. He studied the hot red welt rising on my face for a moment and then murmured discreetly that if my name was Marlowe, I was wanted on the phone. It was Lieutenant Ibarra.
Marlowe, you can stop beating the brush for Julia Perry. We found her.
You did? Where is she, Ibarra?
She's out in the alley here, behind the Beechwood Plaza Hotel, Marlowe. Exactly 8 floors down from the window of her room. She fell through the glass roof above the rear entrance.
Oh.
It's not pretty.
Oh.
She explained the whole thing, including that Ruby guy's murder, in a note we found in her room.
I'll be right over, Ibarra.
Okay, don't hurry.
The old story, Marlowe, when Drum finally got around to trusting her, he practically gave her his business. It was too much temptation.
Mm-hmm.
She'd been stealing from him in a big way for almost a year, her note says.
And she decided to run for it when she knew she couldn't hide the thefts any longer, huh?
That's right. That Ruby caught on some way and she killed him, but I guess murder was too rich for her blood, so she came back here, thought it over, and then checked out.
Yeah. All she left behind was a little plaid raincoat and a purse over there. Hey, she was wearing a dinky hat, too, Ibar. Did you find that?
Mm-hmm. Come over here to the window, Phil. See down there on that canopy, that little black circle? That's her hat. I sent Mooney down to get it. Can't leave any loose ends around, you know?
Yeah. Got a light, Lieutenant?
Oh, sure. Here you are.
Thanks.
Hey, what happened to you? That welt on your face, Phil.
Oh, I backed that horsey liar named Whitaker into a corner, and he slapped his way out with a riding crop. And speaking of loose ends, if I ever catch up with that... Ibarra, where did that stuff on the dresser come from?
Well, this out of the pockets of Julia's plaid coat. Why?
But that's impossible unless... Holy smoke. That's why Whitaker lied to me.
Hey, where are you going with that, Phil? Come back here!
I gotta check on something, Ibarra, and keep your notebook handy. If I'm right, this deal is still wide open. All the way from the suicide's room in the Beechwood Plaza out to the widow's villa in the Sunset Terrace, my mind juggled a jumble of facts, trying to beat them into a brand new pattern. A pattern that had to include an object Ibarra had found in the pocket of that plaid raincoat. It almost made sense, but I needed just a little more. Well, when I turned into the parking lot at the Sunset Terrace, rain began to fall again. Thin, cold rain. I walked to Eve Bentley's door and pressed the bell. Just as I expected, it was Marvin Whitaker, unsmiling and nervous, who answered the door. I didn't give him a chance to think. I just swung hard. Okay, horseman, that squares us up. Come on, heavy, roll over. Let's see if you're carrying a gun. Okay, no gun. Now, be a good boy, Whitaker, and you'll make out all right, but one funny wiggle out of you and I'll crack your skull. It's a promise. Do you hear me?
Yeah, I heard you.
All right. Now, where's Eve? Is she here?
Yeah. Find out for yourself, Marlowe. I'm through.
Fair enough. But just so I'm not talking through my hat, I'll take a look in her closet first.
She won't be in there, I guarantee.
No, but her future might be. Now, let's see. It's got to be in here someplace. Oh, yeah. This is probably it. Brown cloth coat, as chic as a pair of hobnailed boots, and still damp. And the label says the BH Company, Haven, Kansas. That does it. I've got it all now, and my chivalry just died. Where is she, Whitaker? Where's Eve?
Right here, Marlowe. Uh-oh, don't try that. I guess you really do have it figured out, haven't you?
Yes, Eve, I have. Sorry it turned out this way, because you had your points as Eve and as Julia.
Don't put it in the past tense, Marlowe. As Eve Bentley, my life is just beginning, and now I've got everything I ever wanted as Julia Perry.
Then you're Julia Perry.
I was, Marvin.
She still is, Whitaker. At least that's what the bailiff will call it in court.
There won't be any court, Marlowe.
Oh, I'm afraid there will, baby. You're twice a killer now, and both for the same reason, remember? First Ruby, because he saw you as Eve. And the girl you pushed out of the hotel window, who was no doubt Anne, your old chum from the hometown. She must have seen you posing as Eve, too.
All right, Marlowe. Anne ran into me by accident and ruined everything. I had no choice. I promised her money and then told her to go to my room at the Beechwood Plaza and wait for me.
Eve, I can't believe this. It can't be true.
Yes, Marvin, it is true. Darling, I didn't want this mess. I'd have left town this morning as I intended if sweet, sly little Anne hadn't seen me. I tried to get rid of you the easy way, Marlowe. When I sent you to Marvin, the Selma Street address he gave you should have led you to the end of Julia Perry.
Is that why you phoned me and told me to lie to Marlowe?
Yes, Marvin. I was going there to write my suicide note and use the stockroom for my disappearing act. But Ruby caught me, and after that I had to work fast. But it's all right now. It all worked out perfectly. They were the only two who knew besides you, Marlowe.
Aren't you forgetting little Marvin here?
Forgetting him? Oh, no, Mr. Marlowe. Marvin's the one person I can count on.
That's what you think. You don't get me mixed up in this.
Marvin!
I bargained for an heiress, not a murderess.
Why, you dirty load! All right, then. I'll use this gun on you, too, because I'm getting out of here and no one's going to stop me.
But you're right between us, Eve. You can't get us both.
He's right, baby. You're not good enough to get us both. And killing just one of us isn't going to solve anything. What do you say? It's been a long night, baby. You just couldn't tell when you were late.
Want any more of this coffee, Marlowe?
No, it's sludge, Lieutenant. I wonder what Julia Perry uses for a heart.
You know, she planned the thing for 6 months when she first set herself up as Eve Bentley.
Mm.
And it probably would have...
Want to check now?
Oh, yes.
Probably would have worked if everything hadn't closed in on her.
Yeah, her friend Ann from Kansas, Ruby the leg man.
And you with that torn book of matches. Mm. Incidentally, that was pretty fast figuring up in the hotel room there, Marlowe.
Oh, not so fast, Ibarra. I knew Eve had those matches because I left them with her. So when you found the same matches in the pocket of Julia's plaid coat, it figured Julia almost had to be Eve.
And that left Anne to furnish the body for the suicide.
Yeah. You know, I wasn't so sure about that until I found the brown coat with the Haven, Kansas label in Eve's apartment.
Yeah. Well, I'd better wait on back to the office, Phil. Look at that rain come down. Think it'll ever stop?
I don't know. I doubt it.
Oh, by the way, here, it's her hat. Mooney finally got it out off that hotel canopy. Maybe you'd like it for a souvenir.
Yeah.
The millinery people call it a halo hat. Good night, Marlowe.
I sat there a while after Ibarra left, looking at the rain in the street, the cold coffee in front of me, and Julia's little round halo on the table. And finally I got up and went outside. Dirty water scudded along the gutter and gurgled thickly into the sewer drain at the corner. For a minute I caught a glimpse again of the girl I'd figured Julia Perry to be when I went through her cottage in Santa Barbara. Yeah, that girl was an angel. But when I finally caught up with her, a halo turned out to be black, jet black, inside and out. I dropped the little hat into the gutter and watched it go as far as the drain at the corner. And then I went home.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, created by Raymond Chandler, stars Gerald Moore and is produced and directed by Norman McDonald. Script is by Mel Donnelly, Robert Mitchell, and Gene Levitt. Featured in the cast were Joan Banks, Paul Frees, Peter Leeds, Jack Crucian, and Lois Corbett. Lieutenant Detective Ibarra is played by Jeff Corey. The special music was by Richard Orant. Be sure and be with us again next week when Philip Marlowe says...
A startled corpse, a blue-eyed woman, and a cryptic message scrawled by a dingy man with the pieces of a Chinese puzzle that wouldn't fit together until I found out what was deadly about the orange dog.
You'll find a whole hour of fun, variety, music, and thrills on Sing It Again tonight and every Saturday, for it's heard over most of these same CBS network stations. Now, stay tuned for Gangbusters, which follows immediately over most of these same stations. This is Roy Rowan speaking for CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
With the star of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd, as Dan Holliday.
Box 13, care of Star Times. You advertised for adventure? I have it for you. If you will go any place, I can offer Paris. If you will do anything, you are the man I need. If you are interested, call at my office any day between the hours of 10 a.m.
Any day between the hours of 10 a.m. and noon. I am at 247 Wabash Place, signed William Martin. Paris. Adventure. What a dream that could have been. It was, but the awakening was different.
And now, back to Box 13 and Dan Holliday's newest adventure, Diamond in the Sky.
It sounded great. A trip to Paris and adventure for the frosting on the cake. Whoever Mr. William Martin was, he must have known that waving a deal like that in front of anyone was making it a sure thing. But Susie, as usual, had something to say.
I don't know, Mr. Holliday. Maybe it's just somebody kidding you.
That's the girl, Susie. Get out the wet blankets, spread them around.
Then again, maybe this Mr. Martin is beyond approach.
The word, Susie, is reproach. But I've got a brilliant idea.
What, Mr. Holliday?
It's all very simple. I go to see Mr. William Martin at 247 Wabash Place. Wabash Place was one of those little streets filled with small businesses. But number 247 was by itself. No display window in front like the others. I thumbed a bell button that had a card under it with William Martin engraved on it. 1 minute later, after introductions, I was looking across a desk at a short, stocky, apple-cheeked man who said,
"No one knows you have come here, Mr. Holliday?"
"No, just my secretary." "Oh, but she won't say anything."
"You're positive?"
"I am."
"Good. A cigarette, Mr. Holliday."
"Oh, yes, thanks."
"And a light." "You do not like my brand, huh?"
"All this lacks is a fuse. What's in it?"
"My special tobacco. But here's an ashtray."
"Thanks. Well, Mr. Martin, you wrote that letter to Box 13, and here I am."
"Ah, good. Down to business, then."
He opened a drawer, took out a photograph, and slid it across the desk to me. What I saw was a picture of a diamond. But what a piece of ice. I was studying it when Martin spoke again.
"I see by your expression, Mr. Holliday, that you are properly impressed."
"Oh, I'm impressed, Mr. Martin. What is this, the Rock of Gibraltar or something?"
"Not quite. That is the Mirabilis diamond."
"Oh.
You've heard of it, then?"
"Yes, yes, but how does it concern me?"
Here, these credentials will tell you who I am."
"William Martin."
"Well, that's my name, yes, but, you look."
Martin passed me a sheaf of papers with his photo on them. He was William Martin, representative of Jason Van Vanderclef. That name sounded familiar. Martin read my expression again and...
"Mr. Vanderclef is a diamond merchant. He has recently purchased the Mirabilis for $1 million.
That's a lot of hay for a lot of ice.
I beg your pardon?
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mr. Martin.
The gem is in Paris. I am to get it and bring it over here."
"I see. And Box 13?
"You will go with me, Mr. Holliday. I have reservations for you on the
plane. Oh, now, just a minute. I'm not a bodyguard, Mr. Martin, or a private detective.
Please. Nothing so crude, Mr. Holliday. No, I have a much better plan. But first, let me tell you something. There is no jewel thief in the world who would not risk everything to get the Mirabilis."
"He could never sell it."
"No, no. But it could be cut up, and any one of the smaller stones would more than repay the thief for their trouble."
"Yes, I guess you're right. Okay, where do I come in?"
"Well, it is very simple. But like all simple things, it is brilliant. I thought of it."
"Congratulations."
"Thank you. Now, you will pick up the diamond in Paris. I will go on the same plane, but we shall be complete strangers to each other. Do you begin to see, Mr. Holliday?"
"Sure. If anyone's wise that you're going over to get the stone, they'll follow you."
"Exactly. But I won't have it. You will. I shall stroll around Paris as a tourist. Anyone following me will be, shall we say, following a red mackerel?"
"All right, let's say it. But there's only one thing wrong."
"Wrong? I did not think of something important?"
"Yeah, that's right. Me. Suppose this plan doesn't fool anyone. Then I'm set up like a clay pigeon. You lose a Mirabilis, and I'm just another claim for the insurance company."
"Oh, no, no, Allure. You have no worry."
"Well, maybe I worry easily, Mr. Martin, especially if I'm carrying $1 million worth of bait."
"Mr. Holliday, only you and I know of this. There can be no leak of information unless you tell someone."
Oh, sure. I'll go around telling everyone that Dan Holliday's a setup. Here I am, fellas. Come and get me.
That's right. And thieves would kill to get the diamond. They have already. Why, I can tell you the history of the stone. Calcutta, murder. London, murder. Vienna, two deaths.
Mr. Martin, skip the cook's tour of the morgue, will you?
But you advertised for adventure, Mr. Holliday. You will go any place, do anything. Well?
Touché. A little below the belt, but touché. And you've added one more to the population of Paris. Martin's plan was simple, and if it worked, a good way to get the Mirabilis into the United States. I said if. Hey, who invented that word? Well, it was 3 days later that I was ready to leave, passport okay, papers in order, and a phone call from Martin warning me not to recognize him when we were on the plane. I gave instructions to Susie and left for the airport. A few hours later, I was out over the Atlantic. Martin sat well in front of me and never once looked back. So I played it his way and, beyond a quick look, paid no attention to him. Then, as I was settling down to watch the ocean go past underneath,
Mr. Holliday? Mr. Dan Holliday?
Yes, I'm Holliday.
I'm Irene Carson, your stewardess.
Oh, how are you?
Fine. And you?
Wonderful, thank you.
Good. Here's a letter for you.
Letter? You're sure it's for me?
Mr. Holliday, seat 19, flight 12.
Check all the way through on that. All right, thanks, Miss Carson.
You're welcome, sir.
Oh, Miss Carson.
Is there something you want?
Well, just an answer to a question. Who gave you this?
Why, no one. It was among last-minute letters and packages and gifts for our passengers.
Oh, I see. Well, thanks again, Miss Carson.
Not at all, Mr. Holliday.
The letter was from Martin, brief and to the point. I was to go to an address in Paris and stay there until he called. Well, Mr. Martin was playing them close to his vest. Maybe he didn't trust me. And who could blame him? With $1 million worth of diamond for an ante, he wasn't dealing all the cards at once. Well, all I had to do was wait until morning in Paris. Early next morning, we landed at the Bourget Field. I stuck close behind Martin leaving the plane, but he didn't give me a tumble, so, well, I guess my cue was to hold up at the address mentioned in the letter until he got in touch. I was trying to flag down a taxi when...
Is this the last time you saw Paris, Mr. Holliday?
Oh, hello there, Miss Carson.
Looks like you're having trouble.
Yes, a little. Say, how do you get one of these grounded grasshoppers to stop?
You wave in French, like this.
Oh, just like that, huh?
Just like that.
Teach me to wave like that, and I'll be able to get a taxi in Paris. Of course, if you lend me your face.
There's nothing to it. Oh, I almost forgot. I came out here to find you.
Oh? Something wrong? Passport? Papers?
No, but I believe this is yours.
How did you get this?
I found it on the floor of the plane just after you left.
Oh?
What's the matter?
Nothing. Can I give you a lift?
No, thanks. I have my reports to make out.
Maybe some other time if we're still in Paris, huh?
Well, I'll be for 3 days before the hop back to the States.
No, I see. Well, thanks a lot, Miss Carson. I'll be seeing you.
I hope so, Mr. Holliday.
She walked away from me, and my hand was the letter from Martin telling me where to stay until I heard from him. I hopped into the cab, gave the driver the address, and then leaned back in the seat to do some thinking. The letter was in my inside coat pocket. Pretty hard for anything to fall out of there. But my coat had been on a hanger, and I'd been away from it just long enough for anyone to pick up that letter. So, if anyone was wise to the way the game was being played... Martin was home safe, while I stood a better than even chance of being picked off of first base. A half hour later, I was sitting in the little room at the address given me when... Yes? We? Hello?
Holiday?
Yes? Oh, Martin?
Yes. Everything was all right?
Fine. Now what?
You are sure no one knows where you are?
Well, I...
Holiday.
All right, no one knows. Now what?
Here is an address. Go to it. There you will pick up the package.
Okay.
Now, don't write this down. Remember it.
All right, I can remember it.
45, Rue de la Guerre.
45?
No, 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 no.
Do not repeat it there. Just remember it.
All right, all right.
Please, Mr. Holliday, you understand my concern.
Look, my neck's out of yard too, Martin.
Of course, of course. Now listen. There is a Monsieur Goret. Ask for him. Identify yourself with these words. I've come from the sky. You hear that?
I got it. Then what?
There will be no question. Those words are our code. Now, I am registered at the Vendôme Hotel. Leave the package for me at the desk.
Just like that, I leave a package for...
I know what I am doing. Now, that is all. The rest is up to you, Mr. Holliday.
Okay.
And, Mr. Holliday.
Yes, what now?
For your sake, I sincerely hope nothing goes wrong.
And now, back to Box 13 and Diamond in the Sky with Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday.
The rest was up to me, Martin said. All I had to do was collect the Mirabilis diamond, see that I wasn't caught off base, deliver it to Martin, and then that was all. I hailed a cab on the street. Quatre-cinq Rue de la Guerre. Beat.
Governor, with an accent like that, just talk English.
Guess it wasn't very good, huh? Are you an American?
No, a Londoner from Limehouse. Hop in, sir. That was 45 Rue de la Guerre, wasn't it?
Yes, that's right. How did you know I was American?
You kidding? I drove a cab 3 years in Brooklyn. He wants to know how I know he's an American.
Okay, Limehouse. Then you should know what this means. Step on it, never mind the tickets, huh?
Blimey, I ain't heard that since the days in Flatbush. Hold on, pal. Here we go. You're here, Governor. Want me to wait?
Yeah, and keep that motor hot.
Hey, what's up?
I don't know.
Something hot?
Just wait.
Okay, Governor. I'll be here.
I went into the house, asked for Monsieur Corret, gave him the code words, I've come from the sky. And without a word, he went to the fireplace, lifted out a brick and handed me a velvet case. Well, after all this, I had to take a look. Inside the case, well, the Mirabilis looked like a piece of something that would make any crook risk his neck. Or mine. I snapped the case shut. Corret said nothing, just watched me. Showed me out. All right, Limehouse. Vendôme Hotel on the way. Don't bother to fly alone.
I don't know what this is all about, sir. But when you went in that house, that car pulled up back of us and stopped.
Huh?
And they kept their motor hot, too.
Limehouse was right. It looked as though somebody had talked, but not me, and certainly not Martin. We pulled away. The big car tailed after us. Limehouse turned his head to talk to me.
They're tailing us, all right.
Can you get away?
With this act, the three cylinders still work and I got asthma.
You've got to make it.
What did you do? Pinch the crown jewels?
You're warm. Step on and do your best, will you?
Did you pull a heist?
No.
Okay, you've got an honest face. All right, Governor. There's nothing keeping this act together but termites holding hands. But here we go.
That big car in the back didn't lose an inch. Limehouse and I had to go through an empty stretch of road. So I told him I thought that's where the mugs in the big car would make their pitch, and...
Yes, you're right, but I've got an idea.
Well, I can use it.
Listen, look down the street. See that turn to the right?
Yeah?
I'll get close to the curb as I can, and you get ready for a jump.
Huh? Jump?
Sure. I'll act like I'm going straight, but where I showed you, I'll turn fast to the right. You jump out, roll in a doorway or something.
Well, what about you?
I'll make a U-turn back out and pull the mugs down the street after me. You got it?
Got it. Oh, here's your fare. Plus.
Ain't had so much fun since Coney Island. Okay, pal. Try for the brass ring. Nah!
Attaboy, Limehouse. It worked. I collected a few bruises, but I still had the diamond. Farther down the road, Limehouse stopped. He had to because the boys in the big car angled in front of his cab. I waited long enough to make sure Limehouse was going to keep his health. Then I doubled back and forth until I came out on the main street. There I took a bus. I felt like having lots of people around. I got to the Vendôme Hotel, walked to the desk, and told the clerk I wanted to leave a package for Monsieur William Martin. Oh, brother, I got the surprise of my life when the clerk told me there was no Monsieur William Martin registered there. Well, I sat down to figure that one out. Then, just when I was about to give up, I...
Holiday. No, no, no. Don't look at me.
Martin, what the devil?
Pretend that you are not speaking to me. Now, you have the stone?
Yes, but I almost didn't.
What happened?
It's a long story. Want to hear it now?
No, no, no. We have not enough time. Look, I will put part of my newspaper on the sofa between us. Then, when no one is looking, put the diamond under the paper.
Okay, then what?
After a minute, I will pick up the newspaper and leave.
Oh, and I hope this ice goes with you, Mr. Martin.
It will. Don't worry.
Well, that looked like it. All finished. I counted chickens that weren't there. A half hour later, I went to the room of my hotel. I just had the door open when... my deep dream of peace with a knot on my head and a distaste for the whole proceedings. And the room? Well, it was in shambles. Somebody had fine-combed it after drumming on my head. The manager knew nothing about it. Well, that made us even because I couldn't figure why somebody took the trouble to slug me and search the room when I didn't have the diamond. Unless somebody thought I was still carrying it. That somebody... I had an idea, and 40 minutes later, I was sitting across from Irene Carson at a little sidewalk cafe.
Mr. Holliday, you're insane.
I will be after another knock on the head.
But why do you accuse me?
Because no one but Martin knew where I was going to stay in Paris, and you.
But this is ridiculous. How should I know?
The letter you said dropped out of my pocket.
It did drop from your pocket, and I did not read it. Really, I think this is a ridiculous story. A Mr. Martin, who wasn't at his hotel to pick up a diamond worth $1 million, men chasing you, hitting you, searching your room. And now, simply because I had my hands on a letter, you accuse me of...
Who else knew?
You're Mr. Martin. And that's another thing. I never saw you with anyone on that plane. You spoke to no one. You got off alone. Really, Mr. Holliday, it's a fantastic story.
No one saw me with Martin.
Exactly. Now, if you'll excuse me, I've got to get back to Le Bourget. You've taken up too much of my time already.
All right, Miss Carson. But will you do me a favor?
What? Confess to the whole thing? Admit I'm a notorious international jewel thief?
No, I... Just get me on a plane back to the States. Look, I apologize.
All right, I accept the apology. And I'll do my best to get you out of Paris. You seem to be allergic to trouble here.
You're so right, Miss Carson. You're so right. After that rigmarole in Paris, New York's LaGuardia Airport sure looked good to me. I was leaving the field when...
Welcome home, Holliday.
Well, Kling, what a nice surprise.
I've got more. Come on.
Hey, wait a minute. What is this?
You're a writer. Write a line for yourself now.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about a pinch, Holliday, which this is.
Arrested? Now, wait a minute. It didn't make sense. Nothing made sense. On the way into the city, Kling wouldn't say a word. For every question I asked, he growled. But finally in his office...
Where's the diamond, Holliday?
Diamond?
Mirabilis, Schmirabilis. Where is it?
I smuggled it in, Kling.
So you got through customs. Now quit stalling. Where is it?
Are you kidding?
A million in ice and nobody, kids. Nobody.
Now, wait a minute. Why did you pick me up?
I stopped in at your office to say hello, and Susie told me that you were in Paris. Yesterday we got word from Jason Vandercliff that the Mirabilis diamond he was to get from Paris hasn't shown up. We checked with the Paris police. A guy named Corray...
Describe me. Is that it?
Yeah. Susie tells me you're in Paris. Corray describes you, and two and two make four. Now start talking.
Well, I told Kling the story, starting with Martin's letter to Box 13 and ending with my return to the States.
Can you prove that yarn?
Get Martin and ask him.
That'll be a little tough. He's dead.
What?
Yeah. When did you leave for Paris?
Day before yesterday.
Martin's body was found in the river that day. We didn't get an identification until yesterday. Vandercliff identified him.
Kling, you're crazy. I tell you, Martin went to Paris on the same plane with me.
Here's Martin's photograph. Take a good look.
This isn't Martin.
Vandercleff ought to know. His own agent.
And the Martin... The Martin I went with was a fake.
Yeah. Who probably killed the real Martin. Took his place, used his own photo and the credentials he showed you.
I...
Whew. That's a brilliant remark.
But the crooks who chased me in Paris, my being hit over the head after I got the diamond, I...
Yeah, it's easy to figure now. Your fake Martin sent those hoods after you to get the diamond and get rid of you for good so you couldn't identify him.
That's why he wasn't registered at the hotel, because he didn't expect me to show up at the diamond.
And the crack over the head, your room search.
Sure. When I got away from his boys, he sent them to my room thinking I might go back there before I went to the Vendôme. I walked in while they were searching the room and they slugged me. Don't you see, Kling, I'm in the clear.
Yeah? How?
Well, because I had nothing to do with the
Holiday, you've got your story. But only Martin can keep you out of jail.
Then you've got to find Martin.
How? He must have taken an earlier flight from Paris.
But how could he get the diamond through customs?
I don't know. You know, Holiday, this looks like the end of Box 13 for you. Martin loses himself in a city of 7 million, lays low and leaves you to take the rap.
What if I find him?
You'll still have to make him talk.
Listen, Kling. You know I've never been mixed up in anything shady. Maybe I've been roped in because I follow things through, but never deliberately.
What are you getting at?
Will you let me find Martin?
How? You're our only link with him, and you don't know a thing about him. He could dye his hair, leave off his glasses.
I know, but if I don't find him, I'm in trouble, is that right?
You've never been more right in all your life.
All right. If I don't find him in 24 hours, I'll walk back in here and you can do what you want with me. Is that a deal?
You know, Holiday, when I was a kid, I always wanted to be a cop. My father wanted me to be a sign painter. Now I realize my father was a smart man. All right, go ahead.
A needle in a haystack. I was hunting for it, and it was a pretty sharp needle. Any character who could think up a frame as neat as this one would be tough to locate, if he was still in town. But I had to go ahead. It took me 2 hours to remember something that would help me. 7 hours more to follow it up, and an hour to get hold of Irene Carson and take her with me. Then call Kling and give him the setup. It was later that night that I knocked on a door.
Yes? Who is it?
Telegram from Mr. Benjamin Slade.
Oh, one moment, please.
Hello, Martin.
What?
I used to be a salesman. I'm good at sticking my foot in doors.
Who are you?
Mother Hubbard, and I've come to take a look in your cupboard, Mr. Martin.
My name is Slade, Benjamin Slade.
So... You did dye your hair. And you're much prettier without glasses.
I have never seen you before in my life.
Yes, but I've seen too much of you. Come on, Slade, or Martin, give it up, will you?
What brought you here?
One of your peculiar cigarettes. I remembered I tried to smoke one when I first met you.
You are insane.
Yeah, I went to your fake office in Wabash Place. There was an ashtray with some cigarette butts still in it. It took me 7 hours to run down the dealer who makes your cigarettes.
Clever. But I still deny ever having seen you before in my life.
Oh? Okay, let's try something else. Come in, please, will you? Martin, this is Miss Carson. Our stewardess on the trip over, remember? Miss Carson, is this the man who gave you the letter to give to me?
Yes, that's the man.
I did not...
Slips count in this game, Martin. Besides, your handwriting in the letter can be identified.
You're too much too clever.
Duck, Miss Carson! Oh! Okay, Martin, without a gun, you're just another sitting duck. Now get up and come on.
How did Mr. Martin get the diamond over here?
He was too smart for that, Susie. He left it in Paris.
Oh.
He got out and planned to return later. The Paris police have found it.
You know, he was pretty silly.
Silly? Oh, how'd you figure that out, Susie?
Well, $1 million. Jeepers, look at all the income tax he'd have to pay on it.
Huh? Oh. Good night, Susie. Next week, same time, Alan Ladd stars as Dan Holliday in Box 13. Alan Ladd appears through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures. Watch for him in his latest picture, Saigon. Box 13 is directed by Richard Sandbell, with an original story by Sol Shore, adapted for radio by Russell Hughes. Original music is composed and conducted by Rudy Schrager. The part of Susie is played by Sylvia Picker, and Lieutenant Kling by Edmund MacDonald. Production is supervised by Vern Karstensen. This is a Mayfair production from Hollywood.
You knew the job was dangerous when you took it.
Radio production.
Hey, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. And I hope you'll come back next week. Please stay safe and do all the stuff that the CDC says for you to do. And so you will be back next week, because it means a lot to me. In fact, it means the world to me. Thank you.